Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Trudeau's crackdown has begun. The Freedom Convoy is being cleared out. Members of the press are being arrested. A live streamer, while streaming, was arrested, clearly not doing anything wrong. This is, it's obvious at this point, is an abuse of power. They were supposed to be debating the Emergency Act powers that Trudeau was going to be using, and they shut it down because apparently Trudeau decided, I'm going to use them anyway. Now there's video coming out, reports that a woman was trampled by a horse, members of the media being arrested. It's just, it's gone a little too far. But I do think y'all should be optimistic here because it shows the protests worked. They're working. And I don't think it ends here. In the United States, we're hearing there's going to be a convoy leaving from Barstow, California, heading to Washington, D.C. And the D.C. police are rescinding leave for officers because they were preparing for this. So let's get into all that. We'll talk about what's going on. But we also have a lot of cultural stories to talk about. Things about, you know, wokeness in movies and video games. We'll talk about Bryan Cranston saying he's having like a woke awakening or some ridiculous nonsense. And we're being joined by a refugee out of Hollywood who's now working with The Daily Wire. So this should be a really great conversation. We have Dallas Sanye. How's it going, man? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pull your mic up a little bit. Sorry.
I'm a movie producer who is making all the Daily Wire movies now. I spent 16 years in Los Angeles. I'm best known for Bone Tomahawk with Kurt Russell, Brawl in Cell Block 99 with Vince Vaughn, Dragged Across Concrete with Mel Gibson.
Wow.
And then I made a movie called Run, Hide, Fight. Mm. And even though it got a standing ovation in the Venice Film Festival, no one would buy it, right?
Wow.
All of the executives at all of the distributors that I've worked with and made a lot of money for in the past, they've got kids in public schools, they've got mortgages, they didn't want to take the heat internally. So they passed on the movie, and I was saying, what am I going to do? But I'd had a coffee with Ben Shapiro the year before. I called him up, and the rest is history.
Wow. And now you've got Shut-In as well.
Yep.
And there's Terror on the Prairie, I think,
yep,
is what it's called. We had
That's
Nick
right.
Searcy on recently. Mm-hmm. So this is fantastic stuff because, you know, with the escalation in the cultural conflict, building infrastructure is extremely important, but building culture is probably more important. So
absolutely,
I think what the Daily Wire has been doing with picking up these movies and producing more is brilliant. And we'll get into all that stuff. So thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
We're also being joined by Brett Dasevic of Pop Culture Crisis.
Yes, that is true. I'm a refugee of my own sort out here, coming out here to work. What's weird about this to me is like, I don't think I ever imagined coming on here. doing the show, it feels like, I was telling Miracle earlier, it's like, kind of feels like I've elevated to the big leagues from the upstairs studio to the downstairs studio. And we cover a lot of these topics. We try to keep it as, open in perspective as possible, but we're going to get into a lot of that tonight. I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those that aren't familiar, we launched a couple other shows at timcast.com, one of which is Pop Culture Crisis, and Brett is the host.
Yep.
So, you know, this basically happened because I think we were driving back from a movie and then Brett was talking the whole time. I'm like, man, this guy knows everything about this
He knows
stuff.
All about movies.
He was naming
yeah.
directors and producers and like he was, you know, and production assistants. He just like knew the credits. And I was like, Brett, you want to do a show talking about this stuff? And he said yes.
I literally thought he was like, God, he's never going to shut up. If we just give him a show, like he'll just leave us alone and we can drive home in peace. It'll be perfect.
Send him upstairs to talk about the stuff on camera and
exactly.
make money off of it.
Brett's also an incredible skater. You can check out his stuff on Instagram, Brett Dasovic. Ladies, I'm really glad you're here, man, because I've been thinking a lot about memetic warfare and fifth generational warfare. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's happening is that the message has become the communication. It's less about the ideas and more about the way we're communicating. And I think acting is a super important way to communicate and to get people on your side, basically.
It's a good point as to why culture is so relevant, because we were talking about this the other day with Stephen Martian and Civil War stuff, but memetic warfare, propaganda, information, and culture building. You got to have content. You got to have TV shows, movies, video games, all that stuff outside of the infrastructure to support it.
Yeah, variety, so, be adaptable, you know. The way you communicate should be adaptable, and I think being an actor can help show people that you are adaptable.
Yeah, we'll get into all that stuff. We got Lydia as well.
I'm here as well. I'm so excited to have Dallas this evening, and I'm really excited to have Brett. I think that what the Daily Wire is doing with movies is so important. I think it's pivotal to have movies that are interesting to people, and I love the idea of having this analysis of the culture going on as well, which I love what Pop Culture Crisis is doing, so I'm excited for this evening. It's going to be fun.
Before we get started, head over to timcast.com and become a member. And I will also just briefly mention, someone chatted, is that an abacus in front of Ian? Yes, it is. It
certainly is.
Go to timcast.com, be a member, help support the work we're doing. As a member, you'll get access to exclusive episodes of this show that are just for members only. But also, you're making sure the people who report here, the people who work here, have jobs. We've got on-the-ground reporters. We've got field reporters. We are planning out sending someone to embed. I say embed, but, you know, drive along the U.S. convoy and track what's happening as they make their way across the United States. We are in the preliminary discussions about doing that, but it's all possible because you guys sign up as members. So don't even think about it as, you know, for those of you that just want to sign up to get the members only stuff, by all means do that. For everybody else, think of it as a pay what you will. If you like the work we do, if you like the articles, if you like the show, just being a member makes sure we can keep doing it, and it is greatly appreciated. So don't forget, smash that like button, subscribe to this channel right now on YouTube, share the show with your friends. Let's get started talking about the big news out of Ottawa, what's happening with this crackdown. Daily Mail reports Trudeau's trucker crackdown begins. Hundreds of cops backed by armored vehicles and horses arrest at least 100 Freedom Convoy protesters in Ottawa and tow 21 big rigs using Emergencies Act power. So we got a bunch of photos out of here. Mounted officers showing up, people screaming. You've got regular, you know, what looks, I don't know if these are like community officers or what. They're not wearing armor or anything like that. But here you've got what appear to be some kind of riot control armed with tear gas, gas masks. Look at this guy. Look, I've seen this stuff throughout my time. I've seen it at violent riots. I've seen it at, well, mostly violent riots. Typically, when I see peaceful protesters, you might see stuff like this, but you don't see the severity. I've certainly seen police brutality at peaceful protests, especially from the left. Don't get me wrong. But this seems to be absolutely overplayed and extreme for a bunch of, you know, middle-aged truckers and families with their kids and dogs and a bouncy castle. I understand people are like, well, sometimes there's confrontations. Yeah, come on. It's a peaceful occupation in a city. They should be coming in with like 10 officers peacefully saying, look, guys, you know, you broke the law. We're going to take you in, slap on the wrist. Instead, it is Trudeau fascism crackdown, freezing people's assets, trampling people with horses. Dark days indeed, huh?
Is this the group that had the bouncy house outside the... Yes, very scary.
Yes,
nothing scarier than a bunch of middle-aged truckers with a bouncy house for their kids. That is what I live in fear of waking up.
You think you're joking. But no, seriously, they don't know how to respond to it. Mm. When you get a violent riot, the state says, oh, thank heavens, because they know that they're going to earn public support for shutting down riots, even when they barely do it. Mm. But when you got little kids in a bouncy house, they're like, whatever we do, it's going to look really, really bad. How do we handle this? They do get scared of that stuff.
I suppose it's kind of like in the past when they would have kids at the front lines of the protests or the riots, right, to prevent police action, right?
The left does it all the time.
It's an optics thing.
Yep. Yeah, they're even threatening to go after journalists.
This is like how a monarchy doesn't know how to respond to a peaceful protest. They talk about Canada's all about, and I'm not saying Canada's the monarchy, but the Queen could stop this if she wanted. They talk about like peace. We need calmness and peace, you guys. And then when stuff like this breaks out, they don't know what to do because it's this fake, you know, this platitude of kindness and peace, you guys, and it's this fascist, militant, you know, quasi-democracy. So now we're seeing the true colors of how in America we fight each other for fun. And so we don't get to this point because we know how to deal with protest. It's like this country is a protest. It's something you told me. It's a great way to look at our species, the way it functions, the way the importance of resistance. This is bothering me.
Yeah. Dark days indeed. Mm. Now, I wonder what'll happen in the U.S. because, you know, D.C. police are saying they're going to they're pulling leave because they're worried about this as well. I can't say I'm surprised about Canada, though. For those that didn't get the episode yesterday, we had a Canadian guy, Stephen Marchand. He wrote a book about Civil War. And I think his perspective is really interesting. I think I disagree with him to a great deal, but he was basically saying in the United States, there's two countries, a multicultural democracy and a constitutional republic. And I was like, wow, that's an excellent way to point out what's happening. And of course, the United States is and always has been a constitutional republic. Therefore, the multicultural democracy he speaks of is supplanting our culture, our country, our society. And that's very much what Canada is. Canada has been for a long time. He mentioned how, you know, Canada is very unstable. And he was surprised the U.S. was destabilizing. And I'm like, the U.S. has been stable because we are a constitutional republic. It's a safeguard to make sure there's, you know, from the smallest jurisdiction on up, people have representation.
Yeah.
You don't, it doesn't seem like you get that with Canada. It seems like they just don't care about you. You're a cog in their machine.
If you watch Canadian Parliament, that was the feeling I got. It's like a clown show. Like, it's dudes wearing a big white puffy outfit and you're like, what in the hell? And then they heckle each other. Like, how can you get any? It's the weirdest ancient practice, tradition or whatever the hell, but it is not like stable.
Well, I was doxxed this week as a contributor to the Freedom Convoy Give, Send, Go.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I was actually quite proud of it. It was a positive experience. I was so proud.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But I've been Team Convoy since day one on this, and it means so much to so many of us. I look at Australia, I look at Canada, I look at even Italy, my favorite country to visit, and I don't even recognize these places. And it makes me so proud to be an American in a red state. I live in Texas, work in Tennessee, vacation in Florida. Mm. My last 2 years have been basically okay outside of all the nonsense.
But you were in California
for 15 years.
Now, back then, would you have dared speak up in support of this?
I would have, but I knew the tide was turning so heavily that in 2014 I left. I took my whole family and went back to Texas.
Oh, so you got out early.
Oh, I saw it all coming. I couldn't have told you what was coming, but I felt it coming.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I was living in New York, and I kept slowly moving away because it just seemed to be getting worse and worse until we end up in West Virginia or, you know, this whole area.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't want to be in a big city. And then you look at what happens with the lockdowns. So we moved to South Jersey, and then when they did the hard lockdown, I was like, we got to get out of here. Like, I'm not going to sit around and wait to find out how bad it does get. And it got bad. We had those riots back in 2020. The riots crossed the bridge from Philly into South Jersey. And I was just like, yo, I'm done with that. I'm getting out. We're going to the middle of nowhere. We're going to do our own thing. We're going to build our own space. Not to mention, I'll be completely honest, way cheaper out here for land. Mm. So expanding the business, there's way more opportunity. But I think there's a huge opportunity in pushing back from a lot of the stuff by rejecting it. Mm. When we see this going down in Canada, I have one thing to say to all of this. Confidence in the system is being broken. If you can't even I can't speak for Canada. I don't know what Canada does, but for us down here, we see what's happening with the vaccine mandates. They're kind of being shattered, or you know how bad it's been. Talk about multicultural democracy or whatever. But when you cannot get a redress of grievances, you're looking at a hard fall for your society. When you look at the dysfunction in Congress, when you look at the fact that it's being run by people like Nancy Pelosi, I'm just like, that is shattering. I'm gonna go and start setting up something somewhere else to get away from this. Because to put it simply, confidence in the system, be it Canada, be it the UK, be it the EU, be it the United States, it's fracturing. And so it's time to make sure, like, we're shoring up our defenses, we're building something substantive on our own that we control that's gonna be isolated from this, otherwise it shatters along with it.
I hope that the Freedom Convoy thing, if nothing else, I really hope that it shatters people's normalcy bias, this understanding, this thinking that it can't happen here. Because trust me, I never thought I would see something like this in Canada. Canada is the nicest place in the world. They never do anything crazy or edgy. This is wild to me. What, like, literally watching them tonight, the videos going around Twitter of the mounted police just literally walking over people.
I want to give a good shout out to my conservative friends.
Oh.
Who, specifically, not all, I'm not saying all conservatives, the ones who defended Ron DeSantis and Florida passing the anti-riot, bill that would make it a felony to block roads. I said, no, you don't want to do that because we want to tolerate some degree of unrest. Cause now we see what happens in Canada and we're going to be seeing what happens with the DC protest with this convoy. I think we should respect people who want to peacefully obstruct. It's annoying, but we tolerate a certain give to the system. You need that flexibility. Otherwise, if it's too brittle, it shatters. But I also want to shout out a lot of these conservatives. Ezra Levant, I think it was, had a great tweet where he said he used to be back the blue. He would always give the cops the benefit of the doubt. Now he's seeing what they're doing to trampling old women and in front of children. And I'm like, I got to tell you, man, there are a lot of moderate. There are a lot of liberals who have been saying exactly this for some time. Now, I get it. When you get Black Lives Matter and often lying in it to incite violence, the Michael Brown stuff was a lie, the Trayvon Martin stuff was a lie, Ahmaud Arbery stuff was a lie, George Floyd stuff was a lie. I get it. You're like, I'm not going to believe these people. And I totally agree. I'm not going to believe them either. But I'll tell you this. When I was in Ferguson, I saw police just lob a flashbang into a crowd of people unprovoked. Mm. I've seen, and there's videos of things like this. This stuff happens. So there's a certain degree that I'm willing to tolerate because I think policing is an important institution. But you get to the point where they're not stopping the riots in these big cities. The big cities vote for this. They're the ones rioting. They're the ones supporting these mayors and these Democrats and these appointees. They're the ones cheering on the police defending the illegal seizure of funds to paint political message in the street. And I'm just like, why would I defend any of these cops from the rioters when they're a part of that same system? Then you see other cops come in and shut down small businesses over COVID lockdown. And I'm just like, okay, that's it. I'm out. Look, duly elected law enforcement seems to do a really great job, sheriffs. You know, we have a great relationship with our cops out here. But these big city cops are basically part of that multicultural democracy establishment Democrat machine. They can live however they want to live. I'm not gonna intervene when they try to defund those departments. Or now in Austin, what are they? They're indicting 19 officers on aggravated assault. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to live in Austin. Y'all voted for that. Congratulations, officers. You get it.
I understand the isolation mentality. I was thinking about this a lot too, because if we really hit like a bad place of civil war or like where all the power went out, you'd get roving bands of militants that are like really good at what they do. It's called, I don't know what you call it, but not imbalanced war. What do they call it? Where like one side is way better than the other side.
Asymmetrical
war. You'll get people, they'll go from house to house and raid every house. There'll be like 12 guys with machine guns or semi-autos raiding house by house to get all the valuables. And like everyone, these Americans are like, I got my guns. I'm safe. I'm going to stay here in my house, but you're a sitting target. These people know how to conquer and control, and there will be so. I understand the desire to isolate, but those kind of things will come for you if you try and isolate. It is good to be out in the country and have space, but isolation is not the answer. You need to be involved consciously with your fellow man. That's what we do, movies and TV and music and internet video and things like that.
You're right. I agree. What I would say, I don't think the goal should be to try and infiltrate their systems. You know, for a long time, moderates, left liberal libertarian types have been complaining about movies and video games getting woke and doing all this other stuff because they genuinely believed they were in the same system with these people. When I say to you, I don't like your video game because you did these things, it is because I believe genuinely we're working together as one society on a product. I think people need to realize they're not treating you that way and they don't care what you think and they're going to do whatever they want. In which case, you don't want to isolate yourself. You want to make something better on your own and attract the people who are disillusioned by them to come and join you as one civilization, as one society.
That's exactly right. And I spent enough time in Hollywood to understand that. And that's something I feel very passionately about. A year ago when I went on Ben's Sunday special, I talked about parallel economies.
And, oh, yeah.
And this is so important to me because a parallel Hollywood is, in my opinion, the only answer, right? there are not ways for me to get the movies that I want to make, politics aside, in traditional Hollywood right now. They're not supported. In fact, they're discouraged or even disallowed. And so I had to go and try to create a parallel economy where I wasn't going to get attacked. I wasn't going to get, I wasn't going to be tolerated. I was going to be celebrated. And, you know, we're just getting started, but it's game on right now.
Well, so the first movie you actually made, Run, Hide, Fight?
Run, Hide, Fight.
But you didn't make that with Daily Wire.
Correct.
They bought it.
Yes.
So this is a movie that you produced.
Yes.
And it's about a young woman and there's a school shooting. So this, I'm surprised you even got that made in the current environment to be bought by Daily Wire. Like, how does that happen?
Our company paid for the movie itself, ourselves.
Wow.
So we have investors and they, bet on me. And so what happened was we made the movie. We got, you know, great cast, Thomas Jane, Rhoda Mitchell, Isabel May, who's Tom now the Jane. Star of 1883, the Yellowstone prequel. And we went and made the movie by ourselves, totally independently. And right as I, after I made it, I was in Los Angeles and I had a coffee with Ben Shapiro. And I said, I would talk to him about the movie and he was very excited about it. And I, at the end of the coffee, I said, let's make movies together. He said, really? I said, yeah, let's do it. He said, well, okay, well, we can help you in the background, you know, but if you put our name on it, you're going to get killed. I said, are you crazy? I'm going to put your name all over it, you know?
I actually want to ask a question about that.
Yeah.
So the Run, Hide, Fight was produced beforehand, yes. And then they bought it. So then did they have to do press tours for this with the actors? And were the actors hesitant about being involved with the Daily Wire?
So,
like you said, Ben mentioned before, and he's like, he even before he asked, said, we'll do it in the background, because he just assumes that they're not going to want to be that you're not going to want their name involved.
Certainly. We had gotten the movie into Venice, which is next to Cannes and Sundance, the most prestigious film festival in the world. And we got a standing ovation and all that kind of stuff. But when we walked out, our text messages from our publicist started coming in. F, you know, 0 out of 10. How dare you, right? Personal politics, right? All these things. And so I knew we were in big trouble.
Yeah.
So by going with Ben, the movie found its best – by going with Daily Wire, the movie found its best home. That also meant that some of the actors couldn't ask them to support the movie publicly beyond their comfort zone. And some of the actors supported the movie. Some of the actors supported the movie sort of privately.
Quietly.
And others just sort of tuned out. They're all becoming big stars right now. And they all kind of love it, right? They all kind of... because they knew they were in Venice when we all saw a great movie and then
standing ovation, you said.
Standing ovation.
Wow.
The fact that they have to worry about it at all is the most disturbing part of all of it.
No, Brett, they don't have to worry about it.
They don't.
If they don't, yes. If they had the
You're both right. Yep. They do have to worry about it, but they don't have to. They shouldn't.
I'm saying that as a point. Obviously they worry for their careers. I'm saying they shouldn't.
For sure.
They don't have to if they choose not to. These are not, by any stretch of the imagination, impoverished people. Now,
that's right.
It's hard to ask somebody to slash your income by a large percentages.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I get it. For a movie like Shut In, I don't know if these people are like A-lister celebrities worth millions of dollars, but they get paid probably substantially better than, say, you know, a tradesman or someone working at Starbucks, I'd imagine.
They do. Even on Shut-In, where we had the whole cast in advance understanding who we were making the movie with, I mean, we all went to dinner before the movie started shooting, there was still an element of right before the movie started coming out and press time was upon us, people started to get hesitant, right? In one case, a publicist told one of the actors involved in one of our movies that we were QAnon, right? That
wow.
And that she would have been canceled, you know, this actress would have been canceled right away. Now, maybe that's true, maybe that's not. Our opinion is you suffer through 72 hours of bad tweets and then the world moves on, right?
Yeah,
and you made the best movie you've ever made in your career. Isabel May is not the star of 1883 right now because Taylor Sheridan watched Katie and Alexa, or Alexa and Katie on Netflix. he watched our movie and she's great in it. And now she's a massive star. So, you know, it's a tough thing. I'll never ask anyone to do anything they're uncomfortable with, but I will say, and we'll get into Gina Carano in a minute, working with someone who is totally on board from day one. Oh man, that's great.
Gina's fantastic.
That's just so great.
That's, you know, the fact that she was so outspoken the entire time while on Mandalorian, and I'm following her on Twitter, and I'm just like, this is, you just gotta not worry and be yourself and stand up for what you believe in. And when they canceled her, she was just like, I'll find a way. And she and Ben Shapiro and The Daily Wire were like, we're going to make this work. You got nothing to worry about.
It's a great story. If you don't mind, I'll tell
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
It's so terrific. So I believe that when someone like Gina has the guts to do what she did, you have to pray that there are people like me and Daily Wire ready to catch you. And that's not fully realized yet. Right? It's not totally, the infrastructure is not all there yet. We're building ours, but there needs to be more. So Gina gets canceled on a Wednesday night at 10 p.m. I text Jeremy Boring, the CEO of Daily Wire, at 10:05. Huh. And he texts me right back, Ben and I were just texting about this. I said, dude, keep your phone on tomorrow morning. I'm going to call you. This is going to move very fast. Just please keep your phone on. So I reached out to Gina's agent, who I used to work for. The agent said, yeah, we're dropping her. I said, oh, it's terrible. I said, well, at least give me her manager's phone number. So I reached out to the manager. I'd known him from my LA days, barely.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right. We weren't.
Can you say which agency this was? Was it a big five?
UTA, United Talent Agency, wow, where I used to work.
Right?
Yeah, they're a top three for sure.
I'm not a fan.
Huge agency. The same agent, by the way, that still represents James Franco, who, by the way, I'd work with in a second.
Love him.
But,
yes,
but,
James.
But James Franco is more canceled than Gina Carano yet.
Because
one gets dropped and one is not.
The film school stuff about the intimacy,
yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
You know.
James, come.
So,
let's make this great.
You know, it's such a joke, right? So I reach out to the manager who I'd known back in LA, say, hey, let's get on the phone. So we spoke immediately. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, we're kind of just, you know, reeling from all this. We were going to sort of take a step back and, like, you know, we're getting calls from Megyn Kelly and Hannity and all the stuff. I said, no. Two things. One, say no to all of it. Number two, you have to move now. You have to trust me. I'm your guardian angel. I'm showing up Daily Wire and we are going to do this. Let's go. So the next morning, we got Gina on the phone with Ben himself. We got Jeremy and I on the phone with the manager. We banged out a deal that day. Dallas was in the middle of a snowstorm where I live. And then Friday morning, we announced it on Deadline Hollywood.
Wow.
That we did a movie deal with her. And that exploded more than the original announcement. So this is how you fight.
You were right about moving fast.
Fast.
That boosted morale.
By Monday, the story's passed. It's nobody cares. It's that fast. So we had to, she got fired Wednesday night, 10 p.m. By 10 a.m. Friday morning, the announcement.
And she had
I'm jealous, man. We gotta get Timcast Films going.
Oh, we have to.
Yeah, when you're talking about
we're growing,
decentralizing, or basically a new Hollywood, a parallel system. How do you envision that? Because I wonder, Hollywood centralized. That was kind of the point of it. Was there's all these big walled boom stage, sound stages and stuff. So do you want to put them all over the place?
Well,
or all in Nashville? What are you thinking?
Definitely it has to grow an ecosystem, almost taking the role of an old Hollywood studio system. So we would have multiple screenwriters, that we would pay full salaries to, right? They can make more money that way anyway. Full benefits, all this kind of real jobs, writing and directing movies.
Do you think we need to build like localized sound stages?
Absolutely. Nashville has a few and we've used them and they're pretty good. They've got, some really nice ones, but they still don't have one that's competitive with Atlanta or Albuquerque yet.
Okay. What's that going to run? We can talk about that stuff off air, I guess.
Yeah, 500 million.
Whoa. You know? Okay. But we could crowdfund.
Yeah, right? But,
for a full ecosystem. I mean, that's Netflix money. So what our move right now is baby steps, right? I came, my sort of emotional gift to Daily Wire in many ways is that I'm going to work on these movies as if my life depends on them, right? Because they can't be bad. If they're bad, we will get shunned, mocked, all this kind of stuff. They're still going to attack us, and they are. There's some amazing articles that came out in the last few days about us, but like, you know, trying to poo-poo the movies. But these articles exist because they're scared.
Who cares about them?
I love it.
This is what I'm saying. If there's somebody who's like, Ghostbusters 2016 was a great accomplishment, by all means, go watch Ghostbusters 2016. Enjoy it. I'm very happy for you. I'm going to go watch Run, Hide, Fight or Shut In and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And if you want that, Hollywood, you can do whatever you want. But I'm saying if they keep going down this path, I think it's very obvious that their system is going to crumble. The gentleman we had on the other day, Stephen, even mentioned that when institutions start getting woke, they start falling apart.
Right.
And he's a guy who has a very establishment worldview on things, very critical of the far right, as you would call it. But even he recognizes media companies are moving left. And once they do, it starts just crumbling. So if Hollywood wants to get woke and go broke, by all means, I'm not going to complain about it.
Oh, let them.
If my neighbor wants to go swimming with alligators, I'm going to be like, I will advise against it. But far be it for me to tell you what risks you can't take. Now, we'll go over here and we'll make some good movies and have some fun and make jokes and not have to worry about being canceled every 2 seconds. And then I think 10 years from now, the work you're doing, the work Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire is doing, is planting a tree whose shade you will actually get to sit beneath, and so will your children.
That is the hope. That is the entire hope. That is what this is all about. It's to create infrastructure and ecosystem for people who are willing to take risks and fight the system, knowing they can do that, get canceled, and come over here and work with us. It's also really important that we make great movies so that this is sustainable. It has to make money, right? So we're making movies that are small budget, you know, big idea, little box on purpose, but we're growing quickly. I mean, the budgets are already moving up. We're going to get into series, all these kind of things. So it's game on.
It's like it's going to take trailblazers in the writing in the production part too, because like you said, like Gina walks away as an actor. Those same people who have been told that they have to live within the Hollywood ecosystem are going to have to walk away and know and feel strongly enough about the work they create that they believe that script, that show can stand on its own two legs no matter where it's put out, not through the perceived legitimacy of Hollywood, but through any form of media that it can come out through, and the story is what elevates it, not the deadlines, not the AV clubs and the establishment press media that make these things seem like they're better than they are.
Yeah.
I think we got to utilize piracy. Game of Thrones was like one of the most pirated shows of all time, and it was also one of the most popular. I think this is not a coincidence.
Piracy is a tricky one. When you're in a transactional business, VOD movies or even theatrical, you're so reliant on that purchase of that movie. When you're in the streaming world, the money's coming in and it's for a bunch of stuff, right? In Daily Wire's case, there's the political, folks that are, you know, political members, they're watching the podcast and the political content. There's folks who are simply fans of Ben or Candace Owens, for example. And then there's the people who love the movies, and they're all going into one revenue stream, and it's really working from a financial perspective. So the company is super healthy. It's run like a real Fortune whatever company, a Fortune, you know, however many numbers company, and it's terrific. And you walk in and you cannot believe the feeling of being surrounded by all of these people who, you know, if they don't share your exact same values, they're civically aligned. They have the same goal, which is not to be the other side.
Do you think there's a value at running it at a loss, like selling on them for 99 cents a pop and taking our version 70% loss or something?
Our version of that has been opening night YouTubes. So we play the movies on YouTube one night only, for the first 2 hours. It's only available 2 hours. In fact, if you start at 15 minutes late, you're going to have to go watch the 15 minutes on Daily Wire's, on their site.
Is there a way that they're going to figure this out financially? Like when we look at, like we break down box office.
It's already cash flow positive.
Okay. But like we break down box offices. Yeah. So when a studio invests $100 million, yeah, they put 1.5 times that into marketing. Then they have to look at their return on investment for what they make at the box office. How are they going to be figuring those numbers out when it comes to streaming?
It's actually worse than that. You got to add in foreign sales. You got to add in.
And they only take 60% of the box office, even less if it's in China.
The value
25%.
Of who your star is, things like that. All of those pressure points on making a great movie go out the window. So this is as close as you can get to 1969 Easy Rider as I could possibly imagine. I mean, it is Easy Rider. Most people don't know this, but Easy Rider and Five Easy Pieces and The Last Picture Show and some of these other great movies were all produced by these three guys, SBS. And there's a great Criterion Collection about their works. And these guys set up their own shop. They had their own deal with Columbia TriStar at the time. And they made these great movies. That's all we're doing here. We're just creating sort of the most creatively unfiltered version of Hollywood absolutely possible today.
I would like to think that once the work starts coming out more frequently and people can see that what they're producing is not conservative media per se, it's just good media, that as culture turns, people come with it and it becomes less stigmatized.
Yeah. And certainly one day we'll be accused of making a truly conservative movie. Like I'd love to make a comedy called Kamala! Exclamation point. You know, like
maybe a question mark and exclamation point.
I mean, come on. I call it HBO Films in Reverse, right? I would love to do that at some point, but not right now.
But it's going
to
get labeled that way either way. That's what I'm saying. You have to not care that the deadlines, the AV clubs, all these websites, the shill media sites are going to call it that, just like they label religious films, the way they same, but paint all religious films with the same brush.
There was a period where I cared, maybe a few years ago, worried about mainstream press, their reactions. And like I was saying, it's because I felt like we were part of one system together.
Right.
And I didn't want them. I don't want my neighbor to think bad things about me that don't represent me. Then I started to realize eventually, like, these people aren't our neighbors anymore.
Yeah.
And it's scary. It's unfortunate. But I'm not interested in trying to convince people who hate me and refuse to listen when I try to be nice to them.
Yeah, I'm actually.
When I've approached many of these people, be it on the ground in Portland at protests or on Facebook, and I'm nice to them, and their response is, I literally don't care what you have to say. F you, you fascist. I'm like, okay, then. Then I'm going to go do my thing over there. You no longer factor in. So when these media outlets say whatever they want, don't care. We're going to build our thing. We're going to do a good job of it. And guess what's going to happen? Like I said, 5-10 years, people are going to be knocking down the door, desperate to get a role with Daily Wire Productions, with your company. And I'll tell you this too. Look at Rumble right now. I advise people when they're like, how do I want to make a show. I want to do YouTube videos. No. You want to do Rumble videos. Because YouTube has pulled up the ladder behind everybody else. Mm. You're getting banned. You don't know what you can or can't say. Live streamers get too popular too fast. They take you down. Start on Rumble. You've got more market opportunity. This means in LA, there's going to be writers. There's going to be production assistants, producers, smaller staff, APs, whatever. And they're going to say, I would rather move to Nashville because I know there's a great opportunity with Daily Wire and the stuff they're producing. And it's freeing. But more importantly, the market opportunity. Hollywood is such a monolith. It's so hard to break in. Yeah. You hear all these stories about people sending a pizza into producers. When they open it, there's a headshot. Don't even worry about it. There's a real opportunity now with what you guys are doing over at Daily Wire and your productions. So why bother with trying to climb an ivory tower when you can go knock on the front door of people who said, we want to do great stuff and we want to make something new. Here's your opportunity.
You were telling us the story beforehand about Tom Cruise negotiating his own contract for Risky Business. Okay. Can you explain that story again? Because I want to pull back to that.
Yeah. There was a fantastic article on Daily Mail today interviewing Tom Cruise's first manager from when he was 18 to 22 or 3. And Tom Cruise, when he was engaging on Risky Business, sent an email sent a letter to his agent at CAA telling her what to counter in the negotiation. The fee down to the size of the trailer, everything involved. And it was just fascinating. And it just goes to show you what a movie star truly is.
And so the modern day business savvy actors, writers, directors are going to start see the tides turning, see things shift, and they're going to see that Nashville is just as much of a opportunity for them as it would be to go straight to California. And you would hope that in there's going to be some script, a couple of scripts here and there that are going to be so good and they're going to stand out so well that it will be that initial cultural shift, that that touchstone that pushes things to bring it back this way.
Absolutely. And those floodgates have flung open, yeah. Right? I'm getting a phone call almost every day now from an actor, a director, a writer, major, major players, people who have showrun, that's the head producer on a TV show, head writer of some of the biggest TV shows, just saying, I'm so sick of this. Like, please, like, what's going on up there? What are you doing? And then also, I think we've become very inspirational to a younger generation of filmmakers. I have this rule. I answer every email. So send me an email, Dallas@bonfirelegend.com. I will write you back. And, you know, I try to respond to every single email quickly. Sometimes it takes me a few days, but I want to encourage these filmmakers, these young people who understand culture at that generation better than I do, to create. And hopefully they can bring me the right
project. I guess we need to start building tutorials of how to use sound equipment and lighting equipment.
That's all over YouTube for sure.
Good. Have you looked into starting a new union? I'm kind of fed up with SAG. I was thinking about a web actors guild, like WAG or something, where you could decide not to screw people over, but also that you don't have to pay them $1,400 a day or whatever.
The unions are sort of separated into the crew and then what we call above the line, actors, writers, and directors. Those three have their own guilds, SAG, WGA, DGA. And then the crew is under IATSE. And it's a really challenging relationship for low-budget independent producers to work with these unions. They have, for the most part, a reason to exist for the Netflixes of the world. When it comes to a million-dollar movie, it's very hard to engage with them. What I think the trick is if we're going to sort of go further out into the woods – on these movies and really make them on our own, we have to be good stewards, right? We have to pay people fairly. We have to provide opportunities. The other thing is, like, especially with the stunt actors, their insurance is through SAG. Mm. So if they get hurt doing a stunt, and if you've seen any of my movies, there are tons of stunts in every one of them. Someone dies in every movie. And it's like, you know, if these people get hurt, they need the insurance to protect their families.
Definitely.
And still no Oscar for stunts.
Could we set up a whole, there good should
point.
Be.
Good point.
That's a good point, dude. Especially best part of movies. Continue.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In today's day and age, where stunts make up such a huge percentage of the tentpole films that we see, and they get no recognition for it whatsoever.
Oh, brilliant.
Great idea.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. Instead, why don't we create our own Oscars? And stunts will be the last.
We
can't, the last
yeah,
award.
Let's do it. Remember
the Wireys?
They did like the YouTube video award ceremonies they started doing.
The Webbies or
Webbies. Let's
the
do
Benjamins.
That. And then like VidCon and all that. Let's just start like a new
in Nashville.
Movie.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Not even. I'm not even. You know. You know what we do need. So, are you familiar with VidCon?
Yeah.
There was a year where a bunch of YouTubers with big followings showed up because they're political commentary, cultural commentary, and they're shunned. But I'll tell you my story. I actually, had a big talent agency reach out to VidCon. This was back when I was working for Disney, when at the ABC company, and they were like, hey, Tim Pool is a streaming journalist. We'd love to get him involved. And they said, nope, don't care. Won't do it. They end up doing journalism panels with people who aren't journalists and have no followings. And so I'm just like, this is an industry insider game. If you're a friend of the people who run it, they'll claim you're a journalist and put you on a panel for which you have no expertise and have you talk to a bunch of people. It's just trash. So you know what? We do need our own multimedia, video, social media conference that actually talks about merit. Because that's what their whole system is about. Authoritarianism. The woke multicultural democracy is a religious hierarchy. If you are part of the party, you get privileged access.
It'd be cool if the crowd decides who gets to go speak at it. But then you got to avoid popularity contests, so there's going to be calculation.
That doesn't work because if the people all knew who, say, you were, then why would they need to see you go speak if they know who you are because they've heard you speak? The issue is, if we're doing a big event, it's to introduce people to experts in certain fields and certain industries to tell them about what's going on and how here's what you should learn. Here's the information I can give you. The problem with VidCon is they have they bring on this woman who has like 1,000 Twitter followers who doesn't really work in journalism. Mm-hmm. And then they have her speak to an audience of people as an expert. I'm like, why don't you actually just reach out to people who are experts and invite them to come? So that is the woke authoritarianism. If you are a part of the cult, they'll just put you in a privileged position and claim you're an expert. Makes no sense. But it's exactly what these regimes have done in the past. People who aren't farmers are given farms. We need meritocracy. Someone who's got proven skills, who's worked in the industry, will be invited to come speak and share their knowledge the way it used to be.
Remember, they hate meritocracy.
Right.
They hate the idea of meritocracy.
Well, that's exactly it. You hit on it, though, because it used to be a situation where we were all in a respectful relationship with each other and the other sides, and that is gone. These people hate you. I say that all
with a
the
smile
time
on your face.
These people, Hollywood hates you. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about you and everyone who doesn't just, you know, sort of just cave to their absolute woke religion.
Just to add to that, I think they hate everyone.
That's the elite part of the elite.
They hate themselves. But here's everything around them.
But here's where it gets weirder. I get phone calls from my friends who are still inside the system, trapped, right? And they're having to go to their, sessions and their biases trainings and things like that. And it is that they have to play ball because they're getting paid so much money that to lose that salary, right? It's the freedom scales.
So the money holds them hostage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the only way they can get a movie made. They don't know how to come out and risk it all and all this kind of stuff. But they're starting to crack a little bit, right? It's exciting, right? It's exciting to see it.
What you guys are doing is going to create a position where Hollywood will be forced to mingle.
Yeah.
To cross over. You're going to have the latest film that Daily Wire acquired is Hyperions, right?
The Hyperions.
Cary Elwes.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite actors of all time.
When I saw
Princess
this,
Bride, what's up?
No, for seriously.
I love that movie.
When I saw the tweet come out with the trailer, and I'm like, Daily Wire got a Cary Elwes film. That is impressive. He's fantastic. Sooner or later, Hollywood's going to say, if people are finding opportunity with this other new emerging, film industry, we're not going to be competitive if we put constraints on them that the Daily Wire guys don't. So if the issue is right now, someone can choose to do a movie with you guys and your position is we'll always work with you. And Hollywood threatens them. They're going to say, maybe I just go where it's easier and less stressful. Hollywood will be forced to be like, no, we won't blacklist you. We need your talent too. That's the market competition you guys are bringing. That's what we need to see.
When I was in Hollywood, I worked with folks on the left and folks on the right, tons of them, right? The folks on the right never had an issue working with folks on the left. The reverse was so painful. There's just constant complaining and this and that, and everything was a problem. I remember coming in to work one day after Trump was elected, and half the office was crying, right? And I just, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, something like, I don't understand this, right? I don't even identify with this behavior. And so then, you know, it took me a little while to catch up to, where I was supposed to be, which is, you know, my optimized version now, which is hopefully, you know, making movies with the Daily Wire for a decade plus. I'd love to, you know, I'm obviously considering moving to Nashville and being a really big, even a bigger part of it than I am now, but I'm having a blast and it's so important, to do this now because I didn't grow up as a 13-year-old, wanting to run, you know, produce independent movies that I'm producing now. I thought I was going to be running Paramount. I thought I was going to be the president of production of Paramount, like my idol Robert Evans. Mm. Kid stays in the picture.
Well, you technically will be.
Yeah.
It just won't be called Paramount.
That's correct.
It will be a major studio producing some of the biggest films in the world, and it'll be called something different.
I thought the same thing. I was like, I'm going to be Brad Pitt. And then I got just that sexuality gross to me, and I was like, I gotta bail on this.
Ian was in a Super Bowl commercial.
We can do it. We can become the biggest thing on earth. It's just not the way it seemed.
I want to pull up this article from Bounding into Comics.
That's awesome, dude.
Yes.
Godzilla actor Bryan Cranston is well known for a lot of things, claims he has white blindness, says he needs to learn and change. In an interview with the LA Times, promoted his upcoming role as Charles Nichols in the stage play Power of the Sail, he revealed he suffers from what he calls white blindness and advocated for limits on free speech.
What?
Okay. It's a privileged viewpoint to be able to look at the Klan and laugh at them and belittle them for their broken and hateful ideology. Blah, blah, blah. You get the point. You know what this really is? This is... He doesn't actually believe any of this
stuff.
No,
he's being held hostage.
Exactly.
He's being held hostage by his manager, by his agents, the industry he needs to continue to be a part of.
I'm afraid he's being changed.
Ben Shapiro, I implore thee, we must save this man.
Yes.
We must give him an opportunity to say, all that stuff was because they made me say it, I just want to make films. And we'll be like, yeah, you're cool. Right on, we're a fan.
Or is he such a capitalist?
They're just hyper-capitalists.
Yeah.
Who are like, you know what, if I have to do this to make the money, I'll do this to make the money.
Is he possibly worried that his last two or three movies didn't go so well, and that if he does this, he'll be on front page again?
Breaking Bad was a terrible script. Just going to say that now.
What were the last films he produced?
Well,
I'd
have to look.
I haven't seen anything from him since Trumbo.
Yeah, the Trumbo movie, you know, 2015 was not great.
They killed him off in Act One in Godzilla.
I can't give specifics, but we can look it up. But it is inarguable that he has been as relevant as he was when Breaking Bad ended. He's not.
Then it feels like almost.
So you've got the El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie. Okay, fine.
Isle of Dogs,
the voice. One and only Ivan. Ladies' Night is something else.
Maybe it was the getting cast as Zordon in Power Rangers that did him in.
His work on Malcolm in the Middle was supreme.
Top-notch.
I mean, he's fantastic.
He's so good.
And by the way, I'd work with him in a second.
I would 100%.
And I think
you give him the opportunity and you give him a path to success. But I wonder how much of what people are chasing after is legacy. And so the issue is these people who live in the cult genuinely believe that's the real world. And they view actual America as a foreign entity and something to be feared or something not legitimate. Whereas, you know, the way we described it, especially yesterday talking about the Civil War with Stephen Marsh, there's a multicultural democracy in the United States and a constitutional republic. They're at war. They're at odds with each other. But the woke democracy is not the real mainstream America. It's something weird and new that emerged in the past 15 or 20 years.
In place by the media that promotes it daily. Like, you don't realize that your average neighbor does not believe the stuff that you're watching on the news or that you're seeing in these television shows. The average neighbor across from you is a lot more reasonable than you would think, but these beliefs are held in place by the mainstream establishment press, which has, you know, your television holds a lot of weight in your house. The social media that your kids look at holds a lot of weight in your house. A lot of times when we talk about CNN, like they rag on the ratings of CNN, right? It's like, it only got 800,000 views this episode, right? I'm like, yeah, but these views are parroted by celebrities, each of who has hundreds of millions of followers,
right?
And that pushes it outward to the general public.
That's a good point. They measure only 3 million views, but how many retweets that show how many more views? That's a calculation that hasn't been accurately done.
How many of the average celebrity just watches CNN, parrots those beliefs, and then every one of their followers is, you know...
Or how many... Bryan Cranston has an agent who comes to him and says, look, man, you got to come out and you got to say this stuff, okay? It's going to be big. You're going to get a bunch of attention. And he's like, oh, okay.
I got a feeling he runs his agent and that he actually got brainwashed. I saw it happen to a few other people where one morning they wake up and they're like, Yeah, whiteness is a problem. Huh. You know, I think LeBron James had happened to all of a sudden one day.
Yeah, they just want money, man.
You go to enough of those seminars they make you attend to if you work for the government, and I'm sure, you know, more than a few of them do end up starting to fall prey to it.
Very prevalent in Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. And those stories, Tim, like, I see like 20 of those a day when I'm looking up stuff to talk about. Like, a lot of those, I'll skip them. I'm like, you know what? It's so obvious, like, we could cover that every day, and I'd be like, do I really need to rag on this?
You know what the weirdest thing, too, is? I'm sure you can go to Bryan Cranston's history and find a whole bunch of racist and off-color jokes and offensive comedy and transphobia. I mean, there was someone mentioned, I saw on Twitter, SVU. With NBC Law and Order SVU, and that the main character Benson has been severely transphobic in a bunch of different episodes or something. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
because I know that often these people lie or exaggerate, but I wouldn't be surprised because it was a very different world 15 years ago.
The culture shifted.
I wonder if this is actually, you know, he's got a crisis management firm, risk assessment, and they're like, you know, you did these episodes of Malcolm in the Middle. These could come up and bite you in the ass if you come out now and become devout. You'll be safe.
There are absolutely examples of that. And in Hollywood, if you're the most vocal about, you know, being a sort of a male feminist or any of these things.
Never trust a male feminist.
You have the worst history of, you know, dating and past and things like that. So that is a rule. I think in Cranston's case, it literally is, he was less, popular. He's just less part of the zeitgeist. He was fading.
Yeah.
And he said, how can I get back on the front page? That was it. I think it was that simple.
So he decided to figuratively self-immolate.
Yes, that's right.
He was like, I know.
That is exactly what happened, in my opinion.
Look at James Gunn. He had his tons of tweets that were really creepy, we can't even talk about on here. And if you're part of the establishment, you get a pass, because what Disney did is they fired him. DC hired him. And then Disney quietly rehires him for Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
I wonder if it actually played out very, very favorably for him. I wonder if he was actually, quote-unquote, fired by Marvel. James Gunn, I think it was Mike Cernovich who pulled up these tweets to make a point about cancel culture.
Because that was after Rosie O'Donnell.
Right. Yeah. And Rosie O'Donnell or Roseanne?
Roseanne.
Yeah. Roseanne. So, you know, he pulls up these Roseanne's tweets from these, awesome. Like, James Gunn used to make those movies, those really, like, gross horror films or whatever they were called.
Yeah.
And so he has these really off-color offensive jokes. And I'm like, and he's trying to be an edgelord, it's whatever. But of course, it creates a media frenzy. By quote-unquote firing him, he was able to work for Marvel and DC.
Yeah, he got to do both.
He had to do both.
And Peacemaker and came out great.
Peacemaker's fantastic.
Yep, we loved it.
And shout out to, have you seen Peacemaker?
Oh yeah, it's great.
So I'm not going to give too deep of a spoiler, but if you don't want to hear it, you're being warned. I don't think it's a spoiler. I just want to say, the villains in that show are the establishment Democrats. I'm not even kidding. They give a speech, and I'm just like,
climate alarmism.
That's like Dr. Fauci, right? Like, giving a speech. What is this?
It was like climate.
They're the bad guys.
It was climate alarmism mixed with mask propaganda.
Yeah,
disguised as aliens coming from another planet,
and they're the villains.
They're the bad guys.
And I'm like, I actually thought they were going to try and pull some, like, it turns out, you know, this whole authoritarian worldview is the right idea, but they're the bad guys. And I was like, you know, got to respect it.
You know what we got to do? Create a movie where we've already, as a species, learned how to withdraw the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and fix the climate change thing to create graphene with it, and we're building new materials. Oh, but we're competing with trees for the carbon dioxide, and it's a new problem.
And the trees become mobile.
And the trees become sentient and mobile.
Yeah.
But that way, it'll implant in people's minds, like, hey, it's not that big of a problem, by the way, climate change. We can fix the climate if we get proactive about
it. Well, to get a little bit more broad,
a big problem that we can fix.
Right, to get a little bit more broad on your point, this is the purpose of culture. Is
it's subversive.
Run, hide, fight, for instance, was about like standing up in defiance, like, you know, fighting for what you believe in and saving people and things like that. These are cultural messages. It was, you know, I haven't seen it, but I've seen the trailer, and there's like this young girl, she's being trained how to use a weapon, stuff like that. There's a photo going around of kids in Wyoming being in a gym with airsoft pellet guns. Mm-hmm. With pellet CO2 compression rifles. And I'm like, my joke about it was, I am disgusted and offended. These children should be outside with 22s. Putting them in a gym with CO2. What are you doing? Give them a 22. Come on. But the establishment Democrat activist view is shrieking, children with guns. And there's this video from Libs of TikTok of a guy screaming, what? Are you insane? And I'm like, yo, guns are things. Like, we used to teach kids how to be safe and respect them and understand them. And I think that's a good idea. So when you make a movie that shows someone teaching, you know, a young person how to use a weapon, that is creating the idea. It's planting in people's minds. This is a part of life. It's a normal part of life. That's the purpose of building culture. So you're right, Ian.
Yeah. Not a movie about showing kids how to make guns, but in the movie, the character you love is showing kids, like, is teaching
proper,
kids.
Proper yeah. technique. And so then you understand that these things are a normal part of the world. So in your view about solutions towards climate change and stuff like that, making movies, showing possibilities, opens people's minds up to things they may have not considered before, which is why it's so important. If you seed culture only to the left, the woke, you're going to get movies like, man, have you seen the new Craft? The Craft? You know the original, The Craft?
Oh, I know all about it.
You've seen the new one?
Yep.
I don't even think you can call it a movie.
No.
It was a grouping of random woke PSAs that don't seem to go together at all. They cast a spell, turn a guy gay or something. I'm just like, this is not a movie. It makes no sense. But if kids grow up watching that stuff, their brains are going to be all jumbled up and broken from this nonsense.
One of the biggest producers in Hollywood was caught in an interview saying he didn't know any female directors, even though a female had just directed a movie for him.
Wow. Yes.
And so, of course, he got called out, semi-canceled for about 10 hours, and then back, and he was back because he's such a big producer. And so his sort of, his way of fixing things was to put a bunch of female movies into female directed movies into production. The problem is he didn't go and oversee those movies the same way that he did his male directors.
He wouldn't be allowed to.
He let these women go on set and you know, by themselves, and the movies failed. Black Christmas and The Craft.
Oh, Black Christmas. Oh, wow. And it's so bad.
And it's honestly really sad. And so while he was applauded for hiring all these female directors, the truth is he let them fail.
That's like Biden's Afghanistan withdrawal.
Are you familiar with Kierkegaard's let it fail? Are you familiar with Kierkegaard's story about the clown?
No.
A fire breaks out backstage at a theater, and a clown runs on stage to begin to warn the audience of the fire, and they all begin laughing. He then becomes more erratic and extreme. No, you need to understand, they all laugh even louder. And he says, I think this is how the world will end, with people believing it's a joke or something to that effect. And I wonder if, you know, I think about that when I see this guy. He puts these female directors in play just because they're females, doesn't oversee them. The movies are abysmal and flop, and then everyone cheers for him. I wonder if what's actually happening is the people in the audience know there's a fire. They don't care, though, because they're all worried about being the one person to not clap while everyone else is clapping.
One of the female writers on one of the two movies started to talk about this phenomenon on Twitter and quickly stopped.
Oh, yeah.
You know, was sort of encouraged, look, not to do that anymore. You know,
is that the girl that was talking to Jeremy Hamby, the quartering? I saw a good dialogue.
I don't think so. Jeremy's terrific.
She wrote the girl that's writing The Witcher, I think, decided to strike up a dialogue with Jeremy on Twitter, video chats.
Yeah.
So they were really talking about it. I was like, hey, yeah, diversity is important, but within like one skin color, you can have a lot of different cultural diversity. Don't forget that when you're creating.
Well, no, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, the producer went further and created a deal with Amazon to make low budget horror movies where he could get his diversity quotas met so that he could go back to making Halloween with a white male director.
Does he actually have quotas, or is this a personal thing of his?
It's a little, it's all part of the unspoken rule of Hollywood that's now more spoken, to be frank.
It's like the identity politics version of like Wes Craven saying he'd only do horror films so they'd let him make a classic love story.
Yeah, and
he does what they say, the things they request of him, with no passion for it whatsoever.
Although I love the new Joker movie, the Todd, the director, He wanted to make Taxi Driver.
Yeah. Yeah,
so and let's just make a movie. It's what he made.
So he made, yeah.
Let's just make a good movie and call it Joker.
Yeah, but you put Todd Phillips. So you put it in a Joker storyline, and now you get $70 million to make the movie instead of seven.
$55 million made $1 billion without China.
Wow. But Joker was awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome.
Taxi Driver is awesome, of course, too, though.
But that's the trick, right? Right. It's happening with the new Batman movie.
I'd like to make Indiana Jones in a new skin.
What's the new Batman movie?
The new Batman movie is a 1970s, new American cinema movie. Mm-hmm. Housed under Batman. Now, hopefully it's great. That's the pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it will be because they're letting Matt Reeves have run of his production, whereas every other Warner Brothers production that they've done, they've interfered so heavily.
That's a party line, right? Yeah. Who knows? But that's what they're pitching. And Robert Pattinson is a great actor.
Yes.
You know, so.
The Lighthouse.
Yeah. I saw Joker in theaters. The media tried destroying it. They claimed it was incel fan.
That's why it made $1 billion.
But I went to see it, and it's really amazing what the movie is. I hope everybody's seen it, because that ending.
No, I haven't seen it, but tell me. I've watched so many clips.
Oh, you've not seen it?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of clips.
The ending is like,
I've seen the ending.
It's not action. It's not, I mean, there's action in it, but
terror.
It's not superheroes. Bro, the ending is just
psychological thriller.
Edge of your seat shaking. The Joaquin Phoenix's performance, my heart like leapt from my chest in that final scene, and I was just like, I gotta watch this movie again. Wow. It was amazing. And it was, you know, for what it was, you say it's like Taxi Driver with the Joker storyline, but still, it did Joker very, very well as the Joker character.
Yep.
I would love to see them use that version of the Joker in future iterations of DC films. Because that is an excellent Joker.
Yeah. He would fit within the Matt Reeves version of those characters. I don't know if he would fit as well into the standard DCEU, given that it's far more Whedonized.
No, he would. It would be amazing.
I'd rather see him in Matt Reeves.
He's kind of Lex Luthor.
So look. I watched Dark Knight recently, and that version of the Joker is absolutely incredible, but very magical.
Right.
Like, how he pulls these things off. Like, all of a sudden, he's got two fairies rigged with explosives. Like, how did the Joker do that? Why are people working for this guy who's broke? He stole money from the mob, but he's reckless, so much so that the mob guy, Maroney, I think it is, he's like, I can't do this craziness. I'm going to help the police now. It was an excellent portrayal. It was a fun movie, but it was magical. This version of the Joker, they actually made it make sense. Why are people following him? Ideology. Because he was bucking the system. And he's out of his mind, but people are like, I don't care anymore. I absolutely love it. I think he'd be fantastic.
That makes so much sense about why Joker has a following in Gotham City, because Gotham's always been like post-apocalypse. It's basically like the worst New York could become. And you can see, that's great, great observation.
I actually like Batman Begins more than The Dark Knight visually, because I think it actually captures what Gotham is supposed to look like. Yeah. Once it became The Dark Knight and then The Dark Knight Rises, it just became New York and Chicago mixed together. Whereas there was far more, a far more ethereal, dark tone.
Yeah. Here's what really gets me with Joker is the people protesting the 1%. They're outraged. Their lives are miserable. There's crime, and they're driven by ideology. So when I think of superheroes having to fight crazed masses, I'm like, I actually understand how you can't reason with far left extremists on the ground smashing windows. They're blinded by hatred and zealotry.
And as a superhero, you're sworn to protect them.
Yeah, how does Batman fight them? He doesn't. Not really.
Well, no. Batman gives them TBI. Yeah. He bashes their skulls in and leaves them rotting, shivering on the, you know, shaking.
The guy
on the ground.
Stealing the loaf of bread in Batman. The meme of the.
But I'm thinking about how they would do the new Joker in a future Batman movie. Mm-hmm. Is the followers of the Joker are just ideologues, mm-hmm, who are like, you know, Bruce Wayne is corrupt. The Batman supports the police. The police are crooked. This system needs to be torn
down.
Clown
world, baby.
From the ashes of the old, we shall build anew, and the Joker is the one to do it. And then you get Order, the Batman. I think that would be fantastic.
Honk.
There's elements of like Court of Owls story being brought into this, meaning that there's a lot of possibility that the Waynes end up being corrupt in the new interpretation of the film, which could lend itself to that even better. Because you know, he can't fight back as Bruce Wayne then, because his parents are his.
You know, like in the Joker, Thomas Wayne looks kind of bad.
Yep.
So I think I'm so impressed with Joker. And they've done, like, Jared Leto, come on, you know, no disrespect. I think, you know, I don't know about that weird stuff he's doing with those women or whatever, as well as weird stories about him in Hollywood. But Fight Club, big fan. him as the Joker, not so much.
So in Batman, is the Joker who's up against the 1% like against the Waynes because they're part of the 1%? Because that's
crazy.
A cool storyline too.
Just crazy.
Or the people that follow the Joker, are they against the Waynes? Have they focused the hatred onto the Waynes?
Okay, in the film, he thinks Thomas Wayne is his dad, and he's just schizophrenic, and so he's this angry, angsty, deranged guy who snaps. And there's some sympathy for him, the way he's mistreated and abused and how he goes off. But the protesters just think the system is broken. And they see this guy who goes on TV and says it to the world. And now he's got a following. And now the Joker from that point becomes arrogant. And when he says, like, now I see the humor in it, I'm like, that is such a good Joker. I would love to see his evolution into legit supervillain. How his followers support him because they agree with him because they're driven by ideology. Fantastic.
Do you like the idea of them doing it with William Dafoe as a faux Joker, like a three Jokers type storyline from the comics? I didn't like that. Like, I don't want it to be any more like the comics. I want it to be like Nolan made it. It was basically crime dramas. I don't need it to be superhero-esque. I need it to be more like a standard thriller.
The way they did Joker, if they went ultra realistic, like Joker doesn't have magic powers where he can rig a fairy up, but then you deal with, you know, the Batman or other superheroes struggling to deal with someone who's got such a large following. You don't know who is supporting him or where. You don't know how, like, what he's doing. And there's something to be said about people who don't know how to play a game and they're difficult to defeat. So if anyone's like plays poker, there's a certain difficulty in playing poker against someone who has no idea what they're doing. They make weird bets.
Yeah.
You don't know if they're bluffing. And then they play 2-7 off suit and they hit a full house and you're like, I saw the 2 and the 7 on the board. I thought they'd never play it and they win. So having that erratic behavior of Joker would be a really interesting, you know, they could take that version.
It'd be
really interesting against a Bruce Wayne who's...
Where Joker releases like a bioweapon and can blame it on the bat.
Well, I don't know about
Come on. That's the perfect wrap.
But
that's little bow to put on this conversation.
That's not realistic.
Well, that's like Wuhan land. It's a joke about the Wuhan.
I get it, but you know, when
I thought it was funny.
I just said maybe.
In writing, I think.
I suppose I didn't understand because I'm like, that's the opposite of what I just said.
You know? Yeah, it was something else.
So I'm saying like you have this Joker who's just a mentally ill guy who develops a following. How could that manifest realistically against a Batman? You know, or a Justice League.
He's like, I can calculate anyone's actions, but this man is totally erratic. Yeah. I can't pick his next move.
He would have billionaire followers. Like the far left. He'd have patrons who are ultra wealthy and they would get word of like how to support the Joker and they would be like, yes, the system must be torn down. And that's how he would develop these
Joker lives matter. You'd be like, you'd see like the Joker's face painted on like, you know,
clown
like,
lives
what
matter.
Is it? The stadium, you know, they'd have like a Joker flag at the stadium.
It's just a rich guy who's telling the Joker what to take down because then he can bet stocks against the company.
Yeah. Like,
or here'd be a good one. A rich guy trying to manipulate the Joker thinking his craze, you know, can harm companies that would benefit him.
Exactly.
But the Joker's smarter than that. He may be crazy, but the Joker ends up manipulating him back, taking his money. Oh man, I think they could do a lot of great stuff with
pinning
that.
The blame on him.
But I want to go back in time to something that Ian said. You mentioned that even within someone's race, there's great diversity. Well, Ian, I bring you now to a story from Bounding Into Comics.
Boy.
MCU fans claim casting Xochitl Gomez as America Chavez is colorist, harass actress for being too light-skinned, wrong ethnicity. Well, so there you have it, Ian. Yes, you are correct. Within different color people, there's great diversity, but they don't want that. They want simultaneously someone who looks just like the person in the comic while also saying that you can have a black woman play like Anne Boleyn or something. My attitude is, honestly, I don't care who plays a character. Like when Idris Elba was, what's the guy's name in Marvel? With the eyes, you can see everything.
Oh, I can't remember.
Who's the guy who can see everything in Marvel?
I don't know.
He's the Norse god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what
and people
about.
Are complaining because it's clearly a Norse, it's based on Norse mythology and he's not exactly as pale as the other ones. And I'm one of those people that I don't have a problem with the race swapping as much as other people, especially if I don't have a strong connection to the source material.
Heimdall.
Heimdall. But so people, there's a lot of people who are like, it's Norse mythology and Heimdall is a white man. I'm like, dude, he's an actor. I don't care. Like, there are some instances where I can certainly understand it if you're like, you know, that one's a little too much. When people complain about Anne Boleyn being played by a black
woman. Well, it's because it's a real person.
Right, it's a historical figure.
That's a good point.
I still kind of don't care that much. Because I want someone's performance to
best actor.
Then I want Ian to
show.
Play Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
Well, therein lies the point.
I can make that happen.
They will. They right now, the woke, are complaining that Xochitl Gomez is the wrong color.
Yes.
But they're also the same people who complain that or state that you can have a black person play a white character.
The Little Mermaid is now, yes.
But it only goes one direction.
It only goes one direction.
Because they don't actually believe what they believe.
And they are harassing the crap out of this girl, and it's like, I feel so bad
I'm
for
really
this young actress.
I'm really interested in your experience, Dallas. Sorry to cut you off there, but I want to...
Yeah.
You were there. I mean, you're...
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty new phenomenon in Hollywood, right? And so you go back in time and you see movies from 10 years ago when someone did something like this, and now they're getting sort of canceled for it. But the worst case was Scarlett Johansson. Her attachment was going to get a movie made
about a trans
woman. Person. Yep. And I think, you know, those types of movies can be helpful in normalizing a behavior pattern, things like that. Whether you believe in it or not, I'm just saying it's a fact.
And her star power.
And so the trans activist came out, canceled the movie. And now this movie is not going to get made.
Yeah.
Ever. There isn't a foreign sales driving trans name. Now you could say, well, okay, hold it back until there is one. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
15 years? 10
it's,
years?
It's, you know.
Her name recognition drives the ability for that movie to make profit.
And Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, playing a gay man. It's all these different things. It's so exhausting. So again, just the reason why. And I don't want the rules, but once the rules are created, them's the rules.
So look at this real quick. It's this Twitter user, Claudia Amenabar, says, "Oh, whitewashed America Chavez, I am so sorry what they did to you." What? Like, literally what? I don't understand.
Read some of the other ones farther down.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well,
they get more insane.
Who attacked her, though? Was it the Aaron Rupars of the world, or was it the...
Well.
You know, who made the first?
Okay, America Chavez is a strong, confident, queer Afro-Boricua.
Boricua.
With queer biological parents and Afro-Boricua adoptive parents. I do not know who this variant in Doctor Strange is supposed to be, but it's not the character whose stories I've been reading for a decade. Okay, so when people complain that Heimdall was played by a black character, I would like to see you say the same thing. Now, me personally, I don't care that Heimdall was played with. I think Idris Elba is fantastic. They talked about, many people were like, Idris Elba should play James Bond. I'm like, he'd actually be a really great James
Bond.
He'd
be great.
But the problem is these people are acting in bad faith.
Correct.
They would not say, like, Daniel Craig would be a great, you know, Black Panther.
Nope.
They would never say that.
Nope.
Because they don't actually believe what they're saying. They're just racist lunatics.
I would do the first half of my career in the theater, and it was very much about, like, anyone can play any role. Is the idea is, like, give actors a chance. The best actor should have the position. Then I got into film, and it was a different mentality. It was more about... You want to be as realistic as possible. So if the person's supposed to be an African-American, you know, descent, dark skin, and it's not, then it's very confusing, the film. I like how you pointed out, like, when you're portraying real people, it's a very different thing than portraying a comic book character or a movie character.
And I get the people who don't like it when the actual characters get changed. I get the dislike of race swapping, but it just doesn't bother me the same way it bothers other people.
Have you found it to be different? What were you going to say?
Well, I just love when the left eats itself. I mean, this is such a cell phone.
Look
right?
at she's got the LGBTQ flag pin on her chest, and she's being canceled.
Yeah, this poor actress Gomez is no right winger. You know? Scarlett Johansson is no right winger. This is just pathetic.
She's not the one that cast her in that role. Somebody else put her there.
There's a tweet up there where they said these actors need to be better about not accepting roles.
Yes.
They're telling you that you need to look at this and say, this opportunity could feed my family, or in her age, like, just could set me up through college, and I need to pass on that because of ideological reasons.
Do you remember when, just recently, Peter Dinklage came out and said,
they're making Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. I mean, really think about what that means.
And then a whole bunch of actors, little people actors, came out and they were like, you're taking our jobs from us. Stop doing this.
Roles. In a decade.
Yeah,
in a
seven
decade.
Disney movie roles opened up for
could
little people.
I think we found out later that it's just at
a minimum $100,000 each person.
Yeah. He pulled the ladder up behind him. He's a tremendous career. He's a great actor. He was in big movies. He was in Game of Thrones. And now he's like, stop. The only reason he was cast as Tyrion Lannister is because Tyrion is a little, is that character in the book. And so they said, we want someone to fill that role. How about we just get a regular guy to play that character? Yep. If we can, if it doesn't matter who plays who, it's all acting.
Well,
right?
what movie is funnier than Elf? So we, that scene in Elf is so good. And it's just,
and
it's,
he was hired for it.
Great in it.
So I think Ian mentioned this, and I looked it up. I recommend you not look it up, but we were like, Snow White and the Seven Dudes.
It's real. It's real.
It's an adult.
No. It's not what I thought it was. No. I just thought you could change the name, you know?
I think I downloaded the wrong Snow
Cast
White.
Cast whoever. Girls can be dudes, too.
So Disney's talking about changing the story somehow. Because,
no, they had already, what did you find out? They'd done that beforehand. So they had already anticipated that this was going to be a problem before they even went into production. They're going to make it seven magical creatures, all CGI. So a bunch
like
a of
unicorn?
A large list of people are going to get paid just a lot smaller amounts on the special effects cast list. Yeah.
But like a unicorn, a dragon, like what is it? Snow White and the Seven Magical Creatures.
Yes. That's all they know so far. Is like it was never okay. going to be.
Is Lord of the Rings canceled because dwarves does not reference little people? It's a reference to magical creatures like elves. Are we going to complain about elves being too tall?
There's dwarf with a big D, which is fine, but it's the little D dwarves that can't say because that's
Lord of the Rings is grandfathered in. If it was a brand new project, no way.
Well, Snow White's not grandfathered in.
No, it's not because it's a new project.
Have you ever looked at the thing that's like the ginger side and it's all the redheaded characters that have been removed and replaced like that's what's going on right now. Like what they did with the Little Mermaid. They've recast the Little Mermaid. So all of these stories are not grandfathered in. You're going to suffer either way.
Here's what I want to add to this Xochitl Gomez story, America Chavez. She was given the role of a queer woman of color who's wearing an LGBTQ pin. And now she is being attacked for it. You know what the ramifications of this will be? No one will ever want to play a character that represents a marginalized group because it'll damage their career, like Scarlett Johansson, like Xochitl Gomez. And you know what? They're doing it to themselves. This means in the future, they're going to be like, we got a great character for the superhero film who turns out to be a gay guy. I was going to be like, no, I'm not going anywhere near that. Sorry.
Whenever they were releasing Being the Ricardos, which is a fine movie. It's okay. There was a lot of talk about Javier Bardem playing Desi Arnaz. Yep. And there is this amazing article in The Hollywood Reporter where Aaron Sorkin talks about all of the different folks, the diversity coordinators that he brought onto set so that he could get away with casting Javier Bardem as Desi Arnaz. It's incredible.
Do you remember what they did to, you mentioned Gina Carano earlier, when she got fired from Disney, but before they fired her, they tried to have her do a 40-person struggle session with members of the LGBTQ community on a Zoom call. Like, she said, I'll do it in person. I'll talk to these people one by one in person in an auditorium. I'm not going to be bullied by 40 people on a Zoom call. That's insane.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. Like, where am I going to sit here and stare at my camera and be like, dude.
But the average actor, like you said, she's brave. The average actor's like, yeah, you can abuse me for the next hour.
That's right.
Gina Carano was an MMA fighter, I believe. Yeah. She's seen some stuff.
She's not scared.
Mean? She's taken a punch in her day. And that's something to be said. You know, often one of the things I bring up with this, you know, you mentioned people crying about Donald Trump winning the election, and you're like, what is this? I'm like, well, look, if you've never been in the sun, you'll get sunburned. So these people are soft little, you know, blobs of pink jello, and then some other people have dealt with hardship. Someone like Gina Carano, who's trained and fought and had to deal with injuries and getting punched in the face, is going to shrug off the stupidity of words. Someone who's grown up in a pastel safe room with padded walls and beanbags all their lives will step outside quivering and shaking, and then when someone says a naughty word, they'll go, I'm being attacked, it's violence.
A lot of my friends from high school, none of them went into the military, really, except for one guy, and in the time, I was like, please don't. I was so afraid for him because I thought he was going to get hurt, and I didn't want it. But now, today, he's the most aware, like, doesn't care about the stupid stuff. He's fully engaged in like what matters because he saw combat. Once you see combat, there's no joke. There's messing around.
MMA and the military are both like that. If you like when all the stuff happened with Joe Rogan, the amount of MMA fighters that came out in support of him because they understand. They understand that you cannot just let these people bully you.
Well, it's like when you get punched in the face, you kind of realize some things don't matter all that much. Yep. You know, when you've dealt with real hardship.
And if Gina hadn't done what she did, then there would be 10 other people who came after her and showed courage that never would have been able to do it
yeah.
had she not had the courage in that moment.
And it was the way you encouraged her to do it right away.
Absolutely.
That Daily Wire interview was like 3 days later, right?
It was,
like,
it was about a week later, yeah. but it was as fast yeah. as we could do it. But the announcement of the movie came literally within 72 hours or even less, 36 hours even. And, you know, we tend, Gina and I talk a lot about being the flak jacket, right? Walking out there, coming on shows like this, talking about our careers, what we've been through, and taking the bullets and showing courage in many ways. I'm not saying I'm courageous, but I'm saying in order to give other people courage to come out and come work with us and let their American flag fly.
That's why I think humility is so important, because yeah. if you can embarrass yourself in front of people, that's absolutely. Courage, man.
I want to bring up this story just because it's in the realm of cancel culture and it's hilarious. So we have this once again from Bounding Into Comics. Pro Tekken player Tanakana dropped from esports team after saying short men
what?
Don't have human rights.
What?
Saying men under 170 centimeters in height don't deserve human rights, according to a report from Japanese news outlet JCast. During a stream on February 15th, Tanakana declared that men who are under 170 centimeters, just over 5'5", don't have human rights, adding they should have bone lengthening surgery to compensate for their lack of height. I do think there are a lot of people who are deeply offended by that, but I think I hope she's joking, because if it is, it's actually a funny joke. But now she's canceled for saying it, right?
As a 5'5" individual, I'd like just like to say that I'm extremely offended by this, and I think that her cancellation is exactly, she got exactly what she deserved. And I am not getting bone lengthening surgery unless the government offers to pay for it.
As a 6'4" individual, I do not identify with your problems.
You can't understand my lived experience. That's the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
My height Dallas, privilege.
You're an oppressor. Yes. Don't you understand?
Oh, yeah.
And you're oppressing Brett.
Yes.
See, I don't know when I'm going to finally get my due in the social hierarchy of identity yeah. politics, but I think being short means I'm not at the exact bottom as a straight white male, but I'm getting a little bit closer to the top by being under 5'6".
Now I will say, circuitous. I think the issue is she was kind of joking, but in a more serious way. Mm. Like, it's one thing if the point of the joke is that you're mocking, like, there's the stories about Tinder where if a guy's list as height is under 6 feet, they never get responses. If you're mocking those people by saying it, and we know you're mocking the idea, it's a funny joke. But if she's actually saying, like, jokingly, she does think they deserve human rights, but she's insulting about it, that's kind of a dick move. You know what I mean?
Was she, like, streaming and she just said it to her followers while she was streaming? Because I could see, like, if you're just gaming and you're like, oh, yeah, I hate these people. They should all die. You know what? Like, just joking. Like, it just comes out as, like, a goofy little kid thing. But I don't know.
She's basically saying that a guy went to deliver her food and he like muttered and mumbled in front of her house, rang the doorbell, then asked her for her number. And she said, you know, she was scared because he knows where I live, so it's tough. I don't want them to start a fire or something by acting coldly. He was short, maybe only 165 centimeters, she continued. If he was tall and muscular, I might have given him my contact information. Isn't that amazing?
A rough life, man.
Yeah, like, rough life.
She wasn't insulted by being hit on. She was insulted by being hit on by a short guy.
Exactly. Now, imagine if it was a guy on stream. No, mind you, she's gotten the boot, right? So, hey, at least there's some consistency there. Because I would say, if there was a dude, and he was saying that, like, a woman delivered his food, and she was morbidly obese, and, you know, she asked him for his number, and he was like, oh, get out of here. Yeah, he'd be banned instantly. They'd be like, you're fat shaming and all that stuff. I actually think it's funny. I wouldn't have expected her to get any penalty for mocking short dudes like that.
I'm actually surprised this is a story at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Bet she got booted off her team?
Yeah, I'm surprised that anybody cared.
Really? I mean, getting a pro player getting kicked off a team, I mean, is...
She probably had a very expensive salary that they needed to get rid of.
That's true.
They found their reason. They're like, short guys, really? Is that really a reason to get rid of her? They're like, it'll have to do.
But hold on. This is the secret that people need to understand. When we often hear about cancellations, what we're really hearing about is a company trying to break a contract that they can't break.
Yeah, exactly.
But they have morality clauses saying if you shock or offend, we can terminate your contract immediately, and this is what you get. So people might be like, oh, why was Gina Carano fired? Yep. Maybe it really had nothing to do with it.
Yep.
Maybe they were just like, we're paying her too much and we just don't like her. Mm-hmm. We need an excuse for termination.
Well, it probably was ideological lines that they wanted to get rid of her. This just gave them the excuse, and it's selectively enforced because Pedro Pascal said stuff that was way worse.
Yep.
And he's, of course, he's part of the in-group, so he's allowed to exist in that sphere. But they're like,
that guy's creepy. The things he's posted and tweeted about. He's like a creepy guy.
I wouldn't have posted anything that any one of them have posted. Yeah. But the truth is, like, I kind of am a First Amendment absolutist, yeah, right? And so I think just fire away, right? But I also have thicker skin than most people. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm not offended by it. I think in the case of Jeff Zucker, and certainly maybe in this case of this Tekken player, I think this is a money thing.
I also like that it's a Tekken player.
Yeah, she's did you say she's part of a Japanese team? Is that part of this story? I think that was mentioned that she's – I know she says she was Japanese. If that's the case, maybe there's a cultural thing about hating on short guys, because I think Japanese people – might be generally shorter.
Nothing in life is worse than disingenuous morality. That is the worst thing in the whole universe.
You know, I think there's a big divide when we talk about the multicultural democracy, the constitutional republic. I think a core element of it is strength through hardship, strong men, weak men, or women, or whatever. And, you know, you've got a lot of soft people that can't handle the real world. They can't, they're so dependent. Maybe it's independent versus codependent is another way to look at it. For me, I'm kind of like, you know, if I was working in an industry, in fact, this literally happened, and they were doing things I didn't like, I'd be like, I won't do it. You know, when I worked for Fusion, they hire me on, and they say, we're going to be nice vice. We want to be edgy on the ground, do reporting, but we're not going to be as crass and crude and overt with, like, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I'm like, yeah, totally get it. Like, we can get that on-the-ground adventurous vibe, that, like, cool, hip feeling, you know, whatever we're trying to get. While still being family friendly, I'm down. And then 6 months later, they're like, we decided we're going to be woke. And I said, okay, well, I'm not. You know, I'm going to keep doing my thing. And they were like, then you can, you know, I tried quitting. They offered me more money. And then ultimately, I'm like, dude, I'm not going to do it. I don't care about you. I don't care about your company. I would much rather sit in my living room playing video games and fall asleep than deal with whatever it is you think you can offer me. So maybe that's just like antisocial, whatever. I don't rely on them for my confidence or my self-esteem. But I think a big difference between, you know, the two overarching political factions are people who are desperate for recognition and desperate for, you know, people to they want people to think good things about them. And then there are people who are just like, yeah, I literally don't care what you think. I'm going to live my life and be true to myself.
In 07, I was doing Hollywood acting and YouTube, and I started to get – I was like what you were saying. I was seeking the attention I wanted. I was like, when I win an Oscar, I'm going to thank my geometry teacher for the 10th grade. I was really excited in my whole life. And then I started doing YouTube videos, and I started getting the attention elsewhere. And I realized, okay, it's not all about the attention. It's why are you getting the attention? What are you contributing? And that really changed my perspective on everything after that. I left that industry pretty much. I want to change that industry, you know.
Well, you build out of Nashville and you make your own.
Dude, I'm so ready. it's unchangeable. It's Sodom and Gomorrah at this point. Whoa. Right? It's gone.
They fled New York. I think that's how Hollywood got started. They fled the mob because the mob was trying to shut them down in New York. All these directors,
Texas,
1910, 1920s, something. Texas.
Like. I'm really inspired by the Tool song. You know, just you know. Enema is like, you know, learn to swim, flush it all away.
It was wind up in the
bay. It was
Arizona Bay, baby. Yeah. I was just thinking
praying for mayhem, praying for tidal waves.
In California, the federal government struggled to enforce tax law.
Wild.
So it was a lot cheaper and easier to, but I'll give you an example, Ian. You know, when people say they want to change the system, it's like you're walking up to, the Sears Tower in Chicago. I know it's called the Willis Tower. We're from Chicago. We call it the Sears Tower. And you're saying, I want this building to be my building. By all means, you can accomplish that with great power and time and dedication, but that's like trying to move a monolith of such a great structure.
Build a new building.
Start your own building. And so this is the way I see it. Why should I go to Austin? Everyone's like, we're going to go to Austin. And I'm like, it's woke central. Why would I want to go to Austin? No, we're going to get a field in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia, and we're going to build our own building, and we're going to build our own thing out here. Because, you know, there's also people going to Nashville. I certainly think Nashville is a way better bet than Austin. But even then, I look at it, and I'm just like, I'd be really happy just having my own little freedomistan that we can start up and we can build on our own, because I'm not dependent upon anyone else for what we seek to create. And that's the plan, man.
Yeah, there has to be a happy medium between infrastructure, right, and freedom, right, and the ability to sort of do what you need. So Nashville, Dallas, a couple of these other cities are great places for that, because you have enough sort of talented people who can help you fight the culture. But remember, Someone has to handle the Instagram account, and someone's got to handle the marketing, and someone's got to cut the trailer.
And you got to be close enough to an airport.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be in northern Maine.
Yeah.
Or Wyoming. But legit, we did look at properties in rural Pennsylvania, Maine, Montana, Wyoming, and the big problem with all of it is they actually have really great internet. No joke. Airports. And so it's like, how do we actually bring people out to the middle of nowhere? Well, it's really difficult. But with West Virginia, you're close enough to D.C., about an hour.
Right.
So the airport's right there. So that's something, you know, that ends up working out.
Because we got to build an airstrip and a soundstage.
And we can. So
the $500 million really soundstage in the airport, and then we're set.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The airstrip like on top of the soundstage. Is that what it was? Oh, no. Helicopter pad.
Helicopter pad on top of the soundstage.
We got to start investing in helicopters.
All right, we're going to go to Super Chat. So if you haven't already, smash that like button. One honk is one like. And subscribe to the channel. Share the show with your friends. Become a member at TimCast.com to help us grow and expand. We have actually taken pitches for sitcoms and fiction content. Right now we're doing at TimCast.com, it's mostly just journalism, but we also do have Pop Culture Crisis. Brett, of course, is the host. So make sure you go to Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube and subscribe to that show.
And Spotify. I really That's do right. like, to me, the, we cut them up into segments for the YouTube part, but I love the full episode from start to finish. It's about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes. And I think you don't get the feel for it. It's a lot more fun if you listen to it from start to finish.
There's stuff that gets cut out from clips that don't make the full episode.
What do you do? Like, what do you guys dig into? How do you get it?
Imagine, like, what we're doing here. Like, I go through the news. Like, I try to focus more in extremely, like, just on entertainment, right? So, less about the politics of it all. Like, we do cover it. Like you said the other night, you said politics, politics are pop culture. I'm like, right. You screwed me, bro. I can't do both, right? So, we try to cover the more ridiculous stories I leave out a lot of the time because I'm like, I don't need to make fun of this story or talk about this story. But like, we do a lot of reviews of movies. We just reviewed Uncharted last night. We talk about, general news. Like, we do a lot of stuff on Kanye West because Kanye West is, one of the most interesting people in the world to cover. I talk movies a lot, everything going on within the industry, bounding into comics, all the stuff on there. We get everything from there, and it's a lot of fun. We have.
I think, you know, we approach stuff from a political perspective and sometimes drift into pop culture, and then you guys start from a pop culture perspective and sometimes drift into, like, cultural politics.
Yes. Whenever we get into it, I try to, like, you learn over time. We're on, like, episode 58 right now. You feel to the point where you're getting too far into it, and you're like, the average person isn't going, you know, the normie, the person who doesn't understand that there is a culture war going on, isn't really going to be enamored with the harder line political takes that I might have on these things. So I try to draw attention to them and bring them up in a way that shares my perspective, but doesn't bludgeon you over the head with what my beliefs are. I don't think that's the importance of it. I'm more likely to call out the stupidity of projects. My new segment, it's called "Who the Hell Asked for This?" They're making a Blue's Clues movie, and they said it's going to be like Spider-Man No Way Home. I do ask, what? Who the hell asked for this? a Gumby movie just got sold.
Oh, love Gumby.
So, yes, live action Gumby.
Pokey
so,
was my dude.
Live action Gumby.
Live action Gumby. So I see that story.
Stretchy people?
I read that article. I'm like, oh, God, this is awesome. I can get 20 minutes out of this. Easy.
All right, so we're going to – let's get these super chats. Gumby. But again, smash the like button and subscribe to Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube. All right, Key Lloyd says, when can we expect Ben to start doing Stan Lee-style cameos in the productions? Oh.
Yes.
Well, first we got to get him to visit set, right?
Yeah.
So if we can get him to visit set, then I will throw him in a movie secretly. You know, maybe he'll be the guy that opens the door or the driver of the actor.
Can I get you something to drink, sir? This has got to be
No, you got to give him a role he has no business doing.
Right.
Like, you know, being
bodyguard.
Bodyguard.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. But like a cameo, you know. Just because people would be like, oh, and it'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. He's starting to act in more of the Daily Wire Instagram videos.
Cool.
So, you know, maybe your wish is going to come true.
We got to see the Daily Wire cinematic universe.
Yes.
Yeah. So you get these movies and then they get connected at the end of, like, Shut In.
Someone gets shut in a school supply closet.
Yeah.
Does that make Gina the Robert Downey Jr.?
That would be,
absolutely.
Yes, she is.
Yep.
But, you know, considering the time gap between, you know, Terror on the Prairie, I think it's called, right? And then these other films. She's just very old.
She lives forever, so she's always her in every different...
No, no.
iteration of reality?
At the end of Terror on the Prairie, she falls into a hole with magic ice and freezes her, and then she wakes up in, you know, 1970, whatever. And,
yeah, she just plays her great-great-granddaughter.
There you go.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever read the Dark Tower Stephen King novels? I mean, doorways that lead you to other realms. Is that
I saw the movie. Movie was fun. Great. Yeah. All right, let's read some more. We got Just Comply says, the RCMP horse trampled an elderly lady and a guy on a scooter tonight. What are these chuckleheads doing? I am ashamed of my government. Mm. Yo, I have seen this stuff more times than I care to recall. I was up in Montreal during student protests, and I see the cops were throwing. They have these things. I forgot what they're called, but they're like flashbangs with pepper spray in them. So they bang, and then the whole area like stings. It was a really—I've never seen something like that before. It was kind of weird, but that's at least how it was described to me. And I was like, "Is that true?" And then I read some stuff online about it. Might have just been activists claiming it, but one of these flashbangs went off, and then I walked past it. And it was like walking through a cloud of pepper spray. So look, I've seen peaceful protests on the left, and you've had bad cops. I've seen more than my fair share of riots, though, so I tend to be like, well, you know, look, sometimes these people lose control. Now what we're seeing, though, I think a lot of people on the right are starting to experience that these cops are indiscriminate. They'll trample an elderly lady, man. All right, let's grab some more super chats. Let's get into this. Okay, what is this one? James Rogers says, hey, Tim, how can I determine who is telling the proper narrative on this? I have friends in Canada who call this a national embarrassment, and they need to go the F home, but then you tell us the opposite. Who's right? Well, that's just a matter of opinion. If you, look, I trust Aviva Fry, for instance, because he's a regular dude, he's an honest guy, and he's got a YouTube channel. He goes down there and he live streams all of this, and I'm like, I think that's an accurate or fair representation for the most part. There's probably some nuances and things you don't see. But a dude that I know and like telling me live, walking around, is infinitely more trustworthy than the Toronto Sun or whatever saying it's a bunch of white supremacists who are stealing food from the homeless. That's insane and not true.
And it doesn't even have to be just that bad. It's the stuff where they call it anti-vaxxer protests rather than just saying that it's about mandates.
Right.
Which is a much simpler, it slips by people, they don't realize. So the average person who doesn't have a political bias here just says, look at these crazy anti-science people who are protesting science.
Trayvon Martin, story was a lie. The Michael Brown story was a lie. The guy in Baltimore, I forget his name, that was a lie. George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, lie, lie, lie. Endless Justice Smollett, another lie. Then we get the bigger lies, Russiagate, Ukrainegate, lie, lie. It just keeps happening. So I'm done. You know, I still read a lot of these sources and I try and fact check them because there's some stuff you can't get anywhere else. And it's not all bad, but it's too often the overt political stuff and activism is just agenda driven and full of crap. But let's grab some more super chats. People are talking about Ukraine. It's getting pretty crazy.
I heard the Russians pulled the troops off the border. Is that right?
Don't know.
They said they had just been establishing training exercises, and now they pulled back. I don't know what to believe.
Okay, let's Turnpike Paladin says, "Hey Dallas, any updates you can share on Breakfast with the Dirt Cult?"
So there's this great book written by this guy in Oklahoma, named Samuel Finlay. And it's this amazing, amazing story of the first insurgency into Afghanistan, you know, go on 15 years ago. And I have shown interest in getting it made. And there is this wild, rabid contingency online that shows up anywhere I go and asks, what's the latest with this movie? The truth is, I want to make it really, really badly. It's a tough movie to make. It's about a soldier who comes back from the war and falls in love and basically struggles through it as a young man. So it's a drama with war elements to it. It's a terrific book. Everyone should go buy it. It's called Breakfast with the Dirt Cult.
Cool, cool. All right, let's see what we got here. Mordred says, so I have to give my first super chat to Ian for his consistent natural 20s yesterday. Normally he just raises my blood pressure, but he absolutely killed it yesterday. Much love, man.
You got it, brother.
And I think a lot of people should definitely check out yesterday's episode where we had a conversation with Stephen Marsh on the next Civil War. He has what I would describe as an establishment worldview, so there was some arguments, but I think the conversation was absolutely worth listening to, especially if you want to hear opinions you'll disagree with. I think people should check it out. It wasn't really a news-driven story as we often do with, like, you know, a lead story. It was more of a conversation with someone we disagree with about a lot of things, and people certainly in the Super Chats had their opinions.
it was an example that it's not so much about trying to convince people of information, more that just that you are able to communicate with people that have different types of information.
I think it was both of us recognizing from different points of view that this is inevitable. That, you know, the point I made to him when he said, when will Americans realize this conflict is tearing you guys apart and it's going to lead to something worse? And then I said, he's from Canada. And I was like, you like your socialized medicine? Okay, we'll abolish that. Canada will go full private healthcare. Do we have peace? And he was like, I see your point. Like there, our worldview is very much freedom, meritocracy. We're not going to give up civil rights and freedom to people who want to take it away. It's just never going to happen. They can think the same thing, but I'm just going to say it one more time. They live in a cult crackpot worldview. And, you know, his point was, he's like, but they say the same thing about you. And I'm like, I know, and they're wrong. Because Jussie Smollett was a lie. Michael Brown was a lie. Trayvon Martin was a lie. Ahmaud Arbery was a lie. All of those stories, George Floyd, all of it.
Man.
Rittenhouse, another lie. A Black Lives Matter activist was arrested for attempting to assassinate a Jewish Democrat about a week after he posted black nationalist anti-Semitic, support for this organization. He gets bailed out on $100,000. Kyle Rittenhouse goes to prison, goes to jail for a couple months, $2 million bail, is smeared and demonized in the media. Yo, I'm sick of the lies. One side is very clearly lying. One side just might be wrong sometimes. I think it's, anyway, that being said.
GoFundMe taken down for Kyle Rittenhouse.
Exactly. And then you've got GoFundMe allowing Antifa to fundraise to literally steal property, to seize a building. But let's read some more. Atherin Zala says, Ian, rolling a 20 with your tie-dye sweater looks nice and fluffy. Rolling a 1, thinking the queen can put a stop to it up here. She is a figurehead at best.
Wow. You might want to reconsider that statement, that the queen is a figurehead at best. She's the queen of England. But Tim bought me this sweater. Thank you for shouting it out.
We were at the mall and I saw that and I was like, that looks like a sweater Ian would wear.
And he was right.
All right, let's see. Rudy says, hey, Brett, what do you think of Nintendo Direct?
Our co-host Miracle would be the better person to ask about that. I am a vintage video game collector. I am not a modern day gamer.
Oh, vintage gamer. All right, Jason Lindholm says, I did security for Man of Steel and part of Batman versus Superman. The division was apparent then, left versus right. Some of the Cali crew hated being in Illinois. Yeah, well, Illinois is a red state with a blue city in it, as basically every one of these states.
Minnesota is a lot like that too. St. Paul and Minneapolis are very blue, and then the rest of the state just kind of has.
Oh yeah, Ohio is like that too. Yeah. Northeast Ohio is very blue.
There are no blue states, only blue cities and red states.
It's very much a city, like you said, city versus rural is a big part of what these.
Here's a good one. Boof says, good name, by the way. Dallas, do you see masculinity returning to cinema anytime soon? If today's young men ever watched a John Milius movie, they would poop themselves and cry.
Well, a few things here. The answer is yes. We will solve this soon. Strangely, you know, we're only reacting at this point to most of the stuff being written out of Hollywood. So, you know, our first three movies with the Daily Wire are female leads fighting back. But that's also because they're cool, you know? In terms of John Milius, his daughter Amanda, who's been on your show,
is someone
I am desperate to get into the director's chair. I bug her all the time. So we'll get this going.
You know, I'd like to recreate. Oh, what were you gonna
say? Well, I was gonna say the last thing is masculinity, because you know the great Breitbart said politics is downstream of culture. We have to show solid heroic masculine energy back in movies again. And we'll get there.
I thought and feminine energy.
Listen.
I think feminine energy is missing more than masculine energy.
We just covered this the other day because Hannah Claire, she said, why is everything reboots and why are they all female led reboots? And I found a feminist article of it's like, where can I find a take on this that you wouldn't think is the typical take? And it's talking about how they're not telling female stories. They're telling male stories with female characters.
Exactly.
So they're essentially erasing the female experience from these, in the new Terminator movie. She denigrates motherhood and turns it on its head and says, having kids is basically bad. That everything about femininity, motherhood, the ability, what it means to be a woman in modern age is denigrated in Hollywood in favor of telling much easier, simpler masculine stories and just inserting females there. And it's why it always comes off as inauthentic. It's why it never works.
Well, I thought Mad Max nailed it. Fury Road. Charlize Theron was basically the lead, and she was powerful and almost exuded the masculine energy. Except Max was insane, But still, you could see his humanity. And but throughout the movie, you see the man come back. And it's like the power of the woman to help the man become masculine was just such a good dichotomy.
Mad Max Fury Road is a woman in a man's role.
I don't think Max is still Max. He's just lost his mind. Ian, so she helps him.
You don't understand. The masculine role of going to war, going to combat, risking their lives to save the day, that's the masculine archetype. Fury is not a feminine archetype. It is a role written for a man with a woman.
But I think it's like if a woman in a post-apocalyptic situation found her man incapable of protecting himself, she would become Fury. She would become that woman, and that was what was so cool about it.
She would protect the story kids. Is femininity gets sacrificed when there's not a strong masculine presence.
But then you can see the femininity in Max, like the growth and the childlike.
You think so?
No, no. I think I'm with Tim on this. I think Mad Max Fury Road, while it's such a fun movie to watch, I think the story itself, the plot is not aging very well. And we got an amazing article written about us, a couple of days ago from a guy named John Simley. Just awesome. We were all just so enjoying it. It's a total hit piece, but we love that kind of stuff. So we're reading this article, just quoting lines from it to each other and everything like that. And it's just amazing. And in it, he was so angry that there was religious iconography, that there was femininity, things like that. It's a blast, right? We're going to keep doing this and solve these things. Remember, we're just getting started, right?
We should do something about Islam and Christianity and like bringing them together.
So I thought Wonder Woman was actually really great. I wouldn't go as far to say that Wonder Woman was an overtly feminine role because she's still in war with her shield. But there was something more motherly about her perspective on war and ending it versus it was the idealism versus the realism. And her and Chris Pine having the argument about how to stop war from happening. She was overtly idealistic. We end the God of War and it's done. And he's like, no, sometimes people fight. I really, really enjoyed that. But in terms of actually getting femininity right, I think the issue is Hollywood keeps saying, we're gonna make a strong female character. So write Rambo, but make it a woman. It's like, yeah, but that's...
No, it's Rambo's mom.
We called it Rambo.
Well, we did Rambo adjacent as a woman, in some ways in Run, Hide, Fight.
Yeah.
We did everything they asked us to do and we got attacked for it. I love the movie. It's a great movie, but we followed the rules and still got attacked.
Let me read the super chat here. We got Expedition says, Dallas, I'm a great first AD with good credits and have directed episodic. I left Hollywood because of my beliefs. Want to use my talents and skills outside the system for outlets like Daily Wire. Any ideas of how I can connect?
Absolutely. The easiest way to get to me is DM me on Bonfire Legend Instagram. At Bonfire Legend. So I'm not available anywhere else. I'm certainly not on the hellscape of Twitter. I'm too young for Facebook. And keep
an eye out for Expedition Pangea.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sure you'll get inundated, but they were the ones who made the request.
Oh, good. So. Great.
I do want to, before we go on, point out that if they're looking for a series that does have a good amount of masculinity in it, go check out Reacher on Amazon Prime. Excellent.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Excellent. Yeah. I was like, when we covered the show, I'm like, okay, guys, I'm gonna fanboy for about 25 minutes here, so you're gonna have to like settle in while I just sing this show's praises for about 25 minutes. And that dude is allowed to be both hyper masculine, extremely smart. He even gets the woman in the show, which is almost like a no-no in today's day and age. And the woman, the female character, is both strong but also allowed to be feminine. She protects the children later on at the end of the show. It almost is, in current year, as close to perfect as you can get to do that type of character.
I thought the show was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Does the guy have a flaw? You gotta give a gigantic flaw to the hero if you want it to be super powerful.
He does. Yeah, kryptonite.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Is he racist?
He's actually, I would say I don't want to spoil anything, but I would say he's short. He's
5'5".
No, he's 6'.
I'm kidding.
His character is 6'5". But I would say for Reacher, he is all of these really great things. But he takes what's the right way to describe it? His honor is more important than his success.
Oh, okay. Pride. Pride is a big problem.
So I don't want to spoil too much, but he's more interested in killing those who've wronged them than solving the case.
Vigilante, yeah, it's dangerous.
It's not vigilante. It's like, you know, slow down.
Thanks, Tim.
We need to capture this guy to learn who controls the system, and he goes no, bang, and kills him. So he has
no patience.
He's more interested in retribution than he is in solving the case.
He even, like, there's early on in the show, he shoots two dudes in the back, and she's like, these are exit wounds in the front. And he's like, they would have killed me. Oh, well, like, it's very morally gray. Right. But the best part about the character is the fact he is almost Sherlock Holmes-ish in the way he describes when he solves a crime. That character in modern day, at his size, and this dude is enormous, Alan Ritson, is either going to be allowed to be hyper-masculine, big hyper-masculine, or he's going to allowed to be smart. He can't be both. And they let the dude be both, and that was incredible.
I thought Sherlock, he's a heroin addict, which I thought made such a great, that was his big flaw, was he's a drug addict. But it makes the character, like, when he succeeds, you're so happy for him because he overcame his problem.
The character's a bit of a loner. I don't know if you consider that a flaw, but he definitely has, like, attachment issues, and it's played as, like, a part of his character to be very much separate from society. He's traveling his own road, and that plays a part of the character. I don't know if it's necessarily a flaw, but it's definitely an element of who he is.
So let me read this one. Murph says, Dallas, could there ever be a silent movie? I've been thinking about how you could make a movie work with no dialogue. It probably couldn't work, but it would be a challenge. I think there's an obvious answer to this. But did you want to address it first?
I would say a silent movie, in many ways, you know, I made Bone Tomahawk, and it had, I think, 2 minutes of score, right? And most of the time, people weren't talking, or in some of the scenes, it was very quiet. So that's a version of how far it could go. I would say that a silent movie could work if it was experimental and you found some way for it to still be appealing to a commercial audience in a modern era.
There's two really simple answers. I mean, we just had that movie. I thought it was terrible. Where you can't make a sound. What is it with the
Quiet Place?
Quiet Place too, yeah. Which was very little dialogue. And correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't seen it in a while, but Apocalypto. Yeah, there's almost no dialogue.
Certainly.
I think there's literally no dialogue in Apocalypto, right?
Or they're speaking in their native language, but there's very little.
Yeah. But A Quiet Place, you know.
I got bored by that.
I didn't like it.
It was too quiet.
Right. Well, you know, there's...
I'm not joking.
That should have been your review.
Take me somewhere.
It's mentally painful. So there's a room. They call it the quietest room in the world.
Ooh.
And when they say, I think the record for sitting in it is 45 minutes.
So you'd have to watch the movie in that room to really get the full effect.
When you go into this quiet room, it's got these spikes that come out of the walls. It absorbs almost all sound. It's physically and it's like mentally painful for you to be in a room with no sound.
Wow.
And I'll tell you this. I've been in soundproof rooms. We have a sound booth where, like, all the sound absorbing stuff on the wall. I've built soundproof rooms for recording. I cannot stand sitting in soundproof rooms. Because what happens is, what you don't realize, one thing that really becomes apparent, when you talk in a room, you don't realize you are hearing an echo because the sound bounces off the walls.
Right.
When you go into a fully soundproof room, it's a weird feeling. You'll talk and then the sound erases the moment it's weird.
It's sharp almost.
No, I would call it dull.
I think it's
like it feels like I've got giant gym mats smashing my head. And I'm just like, couldn't imagine going into that world's quietest room, you know? All right, let's see what we got here. Arturo says, the thing about Batman villains is that the conflict they create is not just violence, it's psychological. Each of them is a study in human psychosis.
Oh, that was... Thanks.
Your plug is rubbing on your headphones, I think.
Thanks, Tim.
Or I don't know what that is, actually. There's a buzz happening. I think it's your power cable.
Okay.
It's this hoodie.
It's all this hot, static electricity.
Yeah, so Batman villains is not just violence, it's psychological. Each of them is a study in human psychosis. The Rogues Gallery of Batman. It is. It's really great.
Paul Dano as the Riddler is probably the part I'm most excited about.
Really? It's Paul Dano?
Yeah.
Oh.
Colin Farrell as Penguin.
No.
Yes. In basically full body suit makeup.
Really? Yep.
And they're doing giving him his own show too on HBO Max to do beforehand.
Penguin? I'm sure
they're going to do a Penguin spinoff with him.
Yo.
Probably so he doesn't have to wear the suit the whole time. It'll be a prequel where he's just Oswald Cobblepot. So.
Body positivity.
Yep.
John Cena was fantastic in Peacemaker.
The best part, Miracle can't stand John Cena. I'm like, this. He was designed. He was so literally good. Built for this role.
It's fantastic.
And James Gunn was he's designed for James Gunn style of writing, which blends very heartfelt, meaningful moments with really crude and over the top humor. And he blends it together so perfectly that John Cena was the absolute perfect casting.
The Fast and Furious cinematic universe is the best cinematic universe. And and John Cena in the latest film, I was kind of like, you know, take it or leave him. But so I was kind of like, John Cena. But Peacemaker, I watched and I'm like, he nails it. Yep. Peacemaker is a fun show. I think they did a fantastic job. And, you know, I just absolutely love the end. When I was like, oh, it's the Democratic establishment of the evil villains. I'm like, okay, you've won me over with your politics. I'm half kidding. But I started to roll my eyes when they started to monologue.
I told you about the line at the end where I'm like, proto-fascist.
No spoilers.
No, that's not a spoiler. It's just the line that she says.
It's a spoiler. Okay. Don't say it.
All right.
That's like a key line at the end of the film.
So this is like a political movie sowing division by John Cena, the CCP guy?
No.
Shill? Is that
what we're talking about? No, for sure. Like John Cena coming out and doing that China bit, not good, not a fan.
And then and then they call it. Let's just put this Peacemaker. Everything's fine, guys.
No. Peacemaker is a violent, murderous psychopath.
Yeah, like, that works.
The character he was like, I will kill anyone for peace.
That's cool.
He's insane.
So he's like
cherish peace with all my heart, and I don't care how many men, women, and children I have to kill to get it.
That's right. And I love when he's with Vigilante and they're talking about how they have to kill. They used to kill people, and it's like sometimes you got to kill a murderer or a graffiti artist.
Jaywalkers,
they're just insane people. Yeah, they're villains. It's funny though.
All the characters in the show are insanely over the top bad, and that's the best part of it. Except for Adebayo, who plays basically the straight man to the rest of the characters. She's looking at all these people, and she's like, "What the hell is going on? Who are these people?"
I love it.
Yep.
All right, let's see. What do we got here? Let's read this one. Agent Juice Cartoon says, Dallas Sanye, I admire you helping create a viable parallel Hollywood. I want to do the same for animation. I know you do live action, but any way to reach out to you or your studio, even if only for advice?
I would say absolutely reach out to me. The Daily Wire is so pumped about doing animation, right? They've got a couple of projects in the works, a lot of conversation, a lot of financial resources being put forth to this. So please reach out to me. I'll hook you up with them.
We're actually working on a couple video games, actually. It's hard to get going because we're not a video game company. But we have had for a while a playable, I guess you'd call it an alpha. And I don't want to give away too much, but I did post on an Instagram like almost a year ago. It's based on Freedom Tunes animation. And I don't think we've said too much about what the plan is, but it's going to be like a roguelike combat game. And so the goal is to... I'll just say this. The game mocks far-left extremists. And so...
As they deserve.
It's cartoon violence, so nothing over the top. But it mocks political extremists in general. And that's kind of the idea. We want people to play games and make fun of the crazies and the idiots and not want to be a part of that. So we're working on stuff like that, too.
I've read a lot that Pixar animators are leaving because of basically Disney giving preference to their animation studio over Pixar.
Yeah, you're a guy who's been there for 15, 20 years, and you're expecting to get your turn.
And they're not getting theater releases for any of that stuff. They're putting all the Pixar stuff straight to Disney Plus while Disney animation movies go to the theaters. Are those creators leaving? And I know a lot of them are creating their own projects outside there. Is there a possibility of those animators coming over and working with you guys?
Animation is a new space for all of us. We've been live action guys for so long, but it's an important space, especially because it can be comedic, it can be for younger audiences, all kinds of
and
stuff.
And it tends to get less scrutiny from the mainstream. Like I've noticed,
you can get away with more.
DC animated movies are always far superior to DC live action movies because they're allowed to be. They don't have to take as many liberties with the source material. They can stay true to what the actual story was supposed to be, and it gives because of the reduced scrutiny. They're allowed to create what they want.
Yeah, let me just point worry about out. Your actor being the right color.
Constantine is an incredible character, and the Constantine film, I liked it, but they missed so much.
Yeah.
Constantine in the Justice League Dark films as a character in the comics is awesome. The Keanu Reeves version is not nearly as awesome. Now, as its own universe, I thought it was a great movie,
yeah.
But it's just not Constantine. You know what I mean?
Matt Ryan does the live action role well on TV, but yeah. They wouldn't cast a TV actor to play that in a film at this point now. They would want a bigger name.
Daredevil.
I love Charlie Cox's Daredevil. Yeah. He's the exception.
That cameo.
And he also said that he wants to do that character for like the rest of his life. Like he's like, I'd do like 10 more years of this if he can. So hopefully they'll, not that I have any faith that Disney will be able to recapture the magic of Netflix, Daredevil.
That cameo was fantastic
in
No Way Home. He's like, how did you do that? I'm a really good lawyer.
I will say this out loud so we can start to manifest it, but how crazy would Hollywood go if Tim Pool and the Daily Wire collaborated on a movie together?
Be great.
I'm down. I don't know. What can we do?
Animation, live action, comedy, drama. I don't care. We've got to figure it out because that would melt their faces.
It would be cool.
It would be an honor and a privilege.
Daily Wire spun up a master class on how to basically tech, because there's a lot of people I think want to come do this right now.
Yeah.
And if they understand the tech a little bit better.
I have a tiny version of it happening right now. I call it Bonfire State University.
Nice.
And we bring about 10 people to all of our movie sets and we put them in new roles, and they're very young and they're very hungry and they're excited to learn. So they get to see, and they get to see me and Gina Carano and our directors, Michael Polish.
How normal people are.
Well, it's but also like, how to conduct yourself on set, like that is a skill.
And I'll tell you,
and takes time.
Sit around and wait.
We're really
hurry up and wait.
We're really working on it.
Daily Wire needs to fund a like 2,000 episode anime series. So just like Dragon Ball, take it One Piece, you know. And I'm actually half kidding. I don't expect Daily Wire to fund anime, but I think there's a lot of that. There's like the anime right meme.
You got to do it. Oh, a thing where a guy can go inside his own body. And then he has to fight the stuff in his own body to fix his body if he gets hurt.
right. The treatment.
Like Inception.
Come on.
I think that's been done in many ways, but more as a subplot.
Yeah, it'd be a subplot. It'd be like his power.
Inner space.
Buy the rights to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
And get Rick Moranis on
it. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was written by Stuart Gordon, the great horror director.
Well, I would love to do a movie. I don't know what we would or could do. You know, you tell me, and we're game for whatever. So
sci-fi,
yeah,
yeah,
we got to do sci-fi. The number one thing we are not doing right now that we have to do.
Star Trek: The Next Generation is my all-time favorite show. There was a period where I was like referencing it nonstop. Then I started watching Stargate SG-1, which is also an amazing show. Star Trek, man, The Next Generation was
awesome ideas. Incredible. Have you ever heard of a charged black hole? Cause you're about to, baby. It's a real thing. Let's use it for teleport. We're gonna be warping around the galaxy.
My idea for everybody listening was a movie like, you know, Harold and Kumar or Dude, Where's My Car? But it's about Ian trying to get to a graphene conference and then, you know,
via spaceship.
No. It's gotta be normal to make those jokes. So like, you know, Ian gets an invitation in the mail and it's like, you're hereby invited to the latest revelation in graphene technology. And then he goes on wacky shenanigan adventures trying to get there.
Slips on a banana peel.
Yeah,
literally,
stuff like that.
We can make that happen.
Falls on the stairs and then like, you know, and then gets picked up by the mafia and they think he's the delivery guy, but he's like, I'm just trying to get to the graphene conference. Like, is that a code word for something? And they like threaten him and he's like, and then, you know, finally he makes it there and, you know, somehow he's now the CEO of a company. He's a millionaire and he's on a jetpack and he's like, my life's crazy and graphene, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's my plan. That's my idea. I'm actually
starring Ian as Ian.
I think you could do it. Yes. All right, everybody.
I'm just trying to find the graphene, man.
We're going to have a conversation about what movie we can do. But in the meantime, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, become a member at timcast.com to help support all of our work. Check out the Daily Wire's films. I'm really excited. When I heard Daily Wire was getting into movies, I was like, it's exactly what we need. You can follow us at TimCastIRL on Instagram or anywhere else. You can follow me at TimCast. Dallas, you want to shout out anything specifically?
Yeah, you can find our new movie, Shut In, at Daily Wire on their app or at shutin.com. I just have to say this, what Ben Shapiro and Jeremy Boring and all of the guys over at Daily Wire are doing is so important in giving me the opportunity to make these great movies, for us to help Gina Carano and folks like her continue to make movies outside the system. It's really, really, really special. I can say that there's a lot of love for TimCast over there and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think folks who are sort of pushing back on the left's narrative, the more we can do together, get in touch with each other, that's great. this is gonna be so big, and just understand, like, we are killing ourselves to make great movies. And I tell you, Terror on the Prairie, the Gina Carano movie, is one of the best movies I've ever made.
I just got to issue a correction. No love. Pure jealousy, just envy. I look at what the Daily Wire is doing, and I'm like, man, we got to step our game up. We got to get on this, movies, shows, and all that stuff. No, but I kid. I'm a big fan of everything they're accomplishing and they're working on. And I got to admit, I absolutely am jealous of how they're doing movies. I'm like, man, I want to do the same thing. So we can build culture and we can challenge the BS and build parallel systems and have our own spaces. So absolutely amazing stuff. Brett, you want to shout out?
Yes, guys. You can follow me at Brett Dasovic on Instagram. But more importantly, go follow Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube. Like the channel, please. We appreciate that. Subscribe to the channel. But also follow us on Spotify. It's also on Amazon Music, on Apple Podcasts, and on Pandora. And we do episodes Monday through Friday. Me and Miracle Sam, follow us over there.
And I will say, you can follow me at IanCrossland.net. And keep in mind, one of the wonderful things about the entertainment industry is that it's very cohesive. There is competition to get into the industry, but once you're there and you're working on a project, the better you make everyone around you look and do, the more that you're going to end up working in that industry. It's a very team-based orientation. And so it's very, very easy to do once you get into it. Come join us. Get involved. I'll see you later.
Thank you guys very much for joining us. Oh, I adjusted my camera a little too far up. I got a tall guy over there. I was getting the top of his head. Okay, there we go. I want to thank you guys for joining us very much. I know the news has been getting a little dark lately, so it was really, really fun to be able to talk about some slightly other things, and the culture is so important. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. And I really enjoy what Brett and Miracle are doing over on Pop Culture Crisis. You guys may follow me on Twitter and minds.com at Sarah Patch Lights.
You can check out us at youtube.com/castcastle because we don't do the shows on the weekend, but Cast Castle is every day. And that's our vlog and shenanigans and joke channel where we have a lot of fun. So subscribe there. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye, guys.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.